Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 380 of the Roguecast, recorded July 26, 2022. Dave, number 1 through 4.
All right, I was in Boston last week, so we did not record a podcast.
Yep.
I was going to subject you all to my Boston accent and do the joke that I'd come back with a Boston accent, but I didn't, and I can't fake it.
I think that is the greatest gift of all.
I can do a bad Cajun accent, Shao, because Gambit came out this week.
Sure. That seems like it's a good idea.
I went to Boston and I came back with a Cajun accent, Shao.
Tracks.
I did have seafood. That's kind of Cajun.
I mean,
was it spicy seafood?
No.
Then it's not Cajun.
You're right, isn't it?
In general, how was the eating in Boston?
Not bad. You know, they're famous for, like, seafood and stuff. I like seafood, so...
Yeah, and you had some of the seafood?
I had some seafood.
I think I saw a picture of you in front of Cheers.
I did go to Cheers. I didn't go into Cheers. They do have a Norm burger, just so you know.
I can imagine, by the way, you were at a restaurant and you said, bring me something from the sea.
I did say yar a lot. You have to say yar a lot more. You know, I say y'all in the second... There's whales in the bay or whatever. I don't know. I was in Boston for 7 days. I'm not an expert or anything.
But you had a good time.
It was good. Yes.
And the important thing is, after several weeks of missing podcasts, we're back with like a giant San Diego Comic-Con thing.
We only skipped a week. I mean, before that was
confused. We had to skip so many. Yes. Lately.
But so we are back. And yes, San Diego Comic-Con happened. We are going to talk about like a dozen different trailers, if not more.
It's actually going to be very exciting, including. The D&D trailer, which it's crazy, but it looks like it might be good.
Didn't suck.
Yeah.
And also, if time permits, we're going to talk about Nope, which we all saw.
Yep.
And
yep.
We're going to talk about The Gray Man, which Nick and I saw, and yes. Dave would hate.
I feel confident. No. I think review done. As far as I'm concerned, yes. We've covered all the key ground.
Yeah. I mean, we know we're we have a spectrum. So there's hate, love, and think is fine. You can guess where Nick and I fall, probably, based on our general level of grumpiness.
I sure can.
And your review done. So we may not talk about The Gray Man. But before we get to all that, there also was a big thing while I was out of town. The D&D Journeys to the Radiant Citadel book came out. This was delayed. This was supposed to be their June release.
Okay.
And this is a... It's got, I think, seven, ten? It's got a bunch of different
adventures. Like small adventures, yeah.
It is
17?
I thought it was
a dozen.
13 short standalone D&D adventures. Each adventure has ties to the Radiant Citadel and can be run by itself or as part of an ongoing campaign.
This is one where I like the main cover a little bit more. I like the variant cover, but I like that giant, weird little bat creature.
They're both good covers, as always. But the alternate cover, which we actually have this time, usually it goes away, has a little bit of that Steven Universe feel to it for me, and I think that was deliberate. This was all done by sort of new creators. It was heavily created by people of color and queer and that kind of thing. And so bringing new voices in was kind of one of the goals of it.
Well, there was some that I was flipping through. Some of the art in there is very cool. Yeah. One of them, there is, I feel like it's like maybe a dwarf or something that has kind of like, what I would say is looked like Native American clothing and like tattoos and a look. And I was like, man, that is cool looking. It is nice to see some voices that don't get voiced that often.
Also, the Radiant Citadel takes place in the ethereal plane, I guess. So this feels like a nod to, I guess there's rumors that they're doing a Planescape 5th edition.
Oh, yeah.
And this may be the intro point to that as well.
Was Planescape the same thing as Sigil, or are they linked?
Sigil, the City of Doors, is a central part of Planescape.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so that's kind of cool, and it's a big new book. And
standalone adventures are always good because a lot of the stuff that they put out is these big epic length play it the game for like 6 months or a year with your buddies just to get through the adventure. But standalone adventures are awesome. You can play in just a few sessions or whatever.
We got a couple party games from Pink Tire Games, Rabbit, which I think I talked about at Gamma.
Mm-hmm.
This is one with like different superstitions.
Yeah,
it's like a trivia game of superstitions, various cultures. And then You Think You Know Me, which is a party game about, like, kind of, you know, getting together with your friends, and it's questions based on, you know, like, what's their favorite whatever and all that kind of stuff. A fun party game. We got a new Exit game. Exit is, like, the unlock.
It's an escape room game.
Escape room game. But this is Lord of the Rings themed.
Yeah. There's been those are the two the two big licenses I've seen so far is Unlock had Star Wars.
Yep.
And now Exit gets Lord of the Rings, and yep. I have to confess I am interested.
Do you think it's just that you're a bunch of hobbits trying to escape a party?
You're trying to escape the dwarves raiding your food stores or whatever?
Or is it a bunch of dwarves jumping over barrels trying to escape Smaug's lair?
I am imagining it's since these are escape room games, it's more like you've been captured by the orcs or some cool shit like that.
Yeah.
I definitely want to do it.
It's cool. We got a new wave of Critical Role pre-painted miniatures.
Yep.
And we also got a bunch of new stickers from Foambrain, the guys who do our dice and that kind of thing. They're the ones who do those blind dice everybody likes. Their stickers are a variety of cool new ones, right? There was
yeah, there's lots of classes, all the different classes. Mm-hmm. Then there's the, there's like Rainbow Meeples, and I'm trying to think what else there was.
I don't know if it was a special order, but by the way, I saw that there was G.I. Joe miniatures that came in yesterday for the RPG.
Oh, those came in.
Those came in. New set of Yu-Gi-Oh! Or they're not like, it's not boosters, but it's like some box thing.
Okay.
Like, I think they're like, you know, $20 boxes or something like that.
All right, let's jump into news and trailers. Let's start with one we all want to talk about, which is Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
Yep.
I've watched this about 5 times.
Yep.
It is the, of all these trailers and things hitting, it is the one I am most excited about, and that's crazy.
I am such an MCU nerd. I have been waiting for them to drop the Phase 5 and 6 info. And I am excited about that, but the thing that really has my, like, the thing I'm super excited for is this Dungeons & Dragons movie.
It's fired your imagination.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, we've talked for the whole run of the store, and I'm sure we all imagined these things before we ever were working here. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was cooler stuff with D&D? The cartoon in the 80s was cool, but clearly something of a product of the time. Yeah. And they've never seemed to know what they had with the property.
No. Well, I mean, it's not just that the previous movies were bad. It's that they were so bad that we started to think that you could never make a good D&D movie.
Right.
And so,
and then they did serious movies like Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And I think we all knew, every time there was a good D&D comic, it would have a little tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is what they have in the movie.
So I'm going to make a slight comparison here, which I wear as a bit of a hype, but remember when Iron Man came out?
Yes.
And we had so many disappointing superhero movies that we're all like, well, the
trailer... We didn't dare to hope.
We're like, the trailer looks good, but there's no way this is going to be... I mean, it's probably going to be okay, right? And then Iron Man was really, really good, and it led into the MCU.
Yeah.
I think it is just possible the D&D movie could be the same thing.
Look at Randy the Optimist.
I'm setting up expectations.
Oh, my God. He's going to be in tears when it turns out to be mediocre.
I'm going to be so crushed.
They made a great trailer, but no, I think it looks very fun. Nick, did it look good to you, too?
Yeah, it does. It was not my favorite trailer of the release.
What was, just real quick, what was your favorite trailer?
I mean, it's Black Panther.
Okay. More thoughts on that later.
But I will say, the pedigree of this movie, the writer-director... are the people who did one of my favorite movies of the past, like, 10 years, which is Game Night. And they're a bunch of nerds.
Did they do Spider-Man Homecoming, too?
They wrote Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
Is this one of the kids from the Freaks and Geeks? And did he do anything with Undeclared, or that was just some of those other people?
Yeah. He was also in Bones and a couple of other pretty notable things. However, the D&D movie looks great. I think Chris Pine is going to anchor it. And Chris Pine is one of those guys that gets comedy, and
he's got a good. As Kirk, he had a good sense of timing.
He also can sing, and he's playing the bard.
That's great.
So let's just quick say, just in case you haven't seen it, go watch it. The premise is like it has a kind of the outlaw vibe of Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that's probably an inspiration.
Yeah, for sure.
And I also looked at stuff like Firefly, where most of the characters in it were kind of some stripe of outlaws. Well,
they're not going straight up her murder hobo. But they are very much D&D characters. He's like, yeah, we're thieves.
He says we're a band of thieves, and the fun premise is that they stole something, like, not caring who they got it for, and it looks like, basically, they got the artifact an evil bad guy needed to become super powerful.
Yep.
And they're trying to fix things.
Yep. So you've got Chris Pine, the bard.
Yep.
Michelle Rodriguez, the barbarian.
They've actually laid out character names and everything for all who all these characters are.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Justice Smith is playing a paladin.
Yep.
I don't remember.
Jean-René Page is playing...
He's the paladin. Justice Smith is the wizard.
Right.
And Sophia Lillis is the trailer stealing druid.
Yep.
Who turns to wild shapes?
Wild shapes are polymorphs, depending on who you ask.
One of the she uses magic, druid magic, and turns into a giant owlbear and wrecks people.
And if you're one of those people who grumble that they can't wild shape into an owlbear, then you need to shut up.
I do think that is a strong minority, very much.
I'm in a D&D meme group, and it's hilarious to me to watch it because people are already making fun of those people.
Good.
They need to be. So some people are serious about it, and that's fine. You know, if someone really is like, I just don't like that, that's fine. You can have that opinion. Just don't buzzkill everybody about
it.
Right.
But there's been a lot of fun memes about, like, why this works and why it doesn't and what, you know, basically it plays into the D&D rules of the, hey, if it's fun, do that. You don't worry about every little...
You can house rule it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway... her turning into an owlbear, a snowy owlbear, and wrecking place, like, that was super cool.
And then she, in mid-leap, owlbears back into a person and, like, lands on her horse. Yeah. And, like, oh, she's gonna kick ass in this movie.
I love Chris Pine's, like, and what do you call that?
Yeah,
right.
Owlbear. I also loved, I mean, I was geeking out watching this whole thing. There's a mimic. There's a displacer beast. There's a gelatinous cube.
Yeah.
I
believe I saw somebody using a shield spell. Yep. It looked like it was catching some arrows.
The black dragon fires acid.
Yep.
I mean, there's three dragons in this. There's a white dragon, a black dragon, and a red dragon.
We believe this to be taking place in the Forgotten Realms, or we know it to be. And, like, you pointed out, Randy, or you had read somewhere, probably, I think this is true, that Chris Pine's bard, who they have a bit of fun with that, is wearing a Harper's
pin.
And that is a deep cut.
I mean, this is not somebody speculating. Somebody saw the trailer. Like,
and the big bad, this is speculation.
No, people are saying, the Red Wizards of Fae.
Okay, he looks like one of the Red Wizards of Fae.
Yeah.
Which are like one of the big bads in Forgotten Realms.
Also, very much looks like Waterdeep.
Yes.
Very much looks like the Underdark. Yep. We were speculating. This is all speculation.
What's the deal with the dude near the end who's, like, pale and, like, there's... What was that?
I don't know the deal about that, but I'm thinking that he's the Underdark.
Is he a mimic? Is he a changeling?
Drow. I think they may do Drow and do them slightly differently.
Maybe so. Although Drow being, like, at least visually somewhat approximating a person of color, it would be weird to go lighter skinned.
No, it wouldn't. If you make them weird pale people, you're not drawing in all the racial lines of Drow.
You're not saying they're innately evil.
Exactly. And that's why I think it'd be a better thing to go ahead
and make
them,
like...
But
they didn't have ears.
That's an interesting point. Okay. But I see your point. We also should mention, though, that this is one of the things that riffs on Guardians, and I had somebody wonder if this might actually be the case in the movie itself. It uses, like, Led Zeppelin, a whole lot of love in the trailer.
I love that choice.
And it's really good and energetic.
Are they going to do the Knight's Tale thing and actually use...
I think
because a Knight's Tale was not what you'd call a big success...
Yeah.
I think it became a cult.
It became a cult thing, and I like... I think we all like it.
If they use it, they'll use it the same way Thor used it.
Yeah.
Where it'll be, but it won't be, like, in the actual movie. It'll just be, like, it'll be the background music.
Thor actually... Oh, I see what you're...
It'll be the music, but it won't be like it's not in the world,
right?
You know, like,
but like most of the music is not in the world. Yeah. Like Lord of the Rings is not something they actually hear.
Knight's Tale, they did actually use it in world,
but even I guess so. Although they weren't hearing it,
they were because they were singing it, stomping their feet to.
Most of the time it was just music playing.
No, if you watch Knight's Tale, it's clearly meant to be in the world.
Right.
The Queen thing.
Apparently, it's up for interpretation.
The David Bowie song that they do when they're dancing.
I mean, that's just them doing moments where it blends.
Russell,
but the vast majority of it. but like an awesome trailer. The quipping and stuff, like it had a good energy, and I didn't really get any negative vibes. Other than that paladin, at some point,
he shot his sword. That was
sword
weird,
or something.
Right?
And I'm like, that's not a thing a paladin does.
But maybe it's a spell.
Although, as I was looking at it, maybe it is. And I was also like, he's not like swinging it so fast that the scabbard flies off and hits somebody
It felt like a launchy sword.
No, yeah, that was a little bit weird.
But that could be, you know, they run into some artificer or something, and that's like his magic weapon.
Yeah.
Him or something.
Right, and that could be, yeah.
This also has gotten me...
How do they have a paladin in their group of thieves?
Look, paladins can be a more morally flexible. We know this.
They're lawful.
They're always in the D&D parties, which are always murder hobos.
Right.
So.
I'm amused. This guy doesn't quite have the paladin veneer.
Yeah.
He looks more like a thief.
Yeah. But he's in full-on armor.
But I will be curious to see, is he like, all right, going along with things the way paladins generally have to in D&D? Or is he, in fact, like you say, a morally flexible paladin?
Anyway,
what are you saying, Nick? I'm sorry.
This is also giving way to my toy fan, because Hasbro's finally going to do a line of D&D figures.
Yep, and of course, one of those through Hasbro Pulse exclusively, and it's the Gelatinous Cube.
It's starting there. It'll go to elsewhere. Okay. But it's already up for pre-order. It's a 6-inch scale Gelatinous Cube, but you can put a person that's got a stand inside of it so it can look like they're floating.
And it's got a bunch of other little half-dissolved artifacts and swords and coin purses and stuff.
So obviously that... You know.
So look for that display coming soon.
I'm just excited to actually have fantasy characters.
Once Nick tears down the Star Wars display he's currently building, his brain is already building the D&D display.
All right. Let's knock out some stuff we're less excited about. no, there's some other good ones.
Let's stick with a fantasy theme, because there's two other fantasy trailers.
Yep. Okay.
Both much more serious. First is House of the Dragons. This is the Game of Thrones prequel.
So I didn't...
House of the Dragon singular, right?
Is it House of the Dragon?
I think so.
Yeah, so I didn't watch the previous trailer that they had, like, teaser from... Because I was like, it's just going to be a Game of Thrones thing.
Right.
This trailer, I thought, was really well constructed. It gives a kind of a loadout of all the different characters that you're going to meet.
I mean, does it? I didn't feel like I got a sense of factions or
names. Well, it's all the Targaryens.
I saw there's Targaryens in it, but, like... There was, like, so much stuff happening that I didn't get a clear fix on what
was afoot. I saw that Rice Ifans is going to be in there. And I've also heard that there's not going to be, like... There's going to be Rice Ifans is
the lizard.
The lizard. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Okay. Is he black?
No.
Okay. There's somebody... The only reason I ask is because there's somebody who I heard there was a little hubbub, as fans will do, because there's, like, some badass sailor, pirate, or something like that, who's known from the books to fans. He's not black in the books, and he is now. Uh-oh.
Fans have never had any problem with this, David Lorschtager.
Anyway, look, badass in the trailer is all I know.
I'll also say, notably, I think Matt Smith is going to kill this. He's such a good actor.
It's one of those ones, so I wish I had that strong impression. I like Matt Smith. I think he probably has the chops for it, but there's nothing to indicate it in this.
Well,
to me,
I've seen, he's obviously played Doctor, and he's done various things. He was also in the Upstairs Downstairs, the Queen on Netflix. What is that?
The Crown.
The Crown, thank you.
Okay.
And he played the Queen's husband.
Okay. He's good in that.
Philip.
He played a creep in Last Night in Soho.
Yeah, he is.
No, it's more just one of those, like, the trailer, to me it was just Game of Thrones stuff. I saw people talking about Succession, the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
They had, like, do they have dragons on their side? We've seen that. There was a question of whether this young Targaryen girl could be on the throne or not, and they were like, that's never been done, and she's like, I will change things. And I'm like, that's very Daenerys-ish. So, like, it will probably be good, and it could be great. But the trailer, to me, looked like generic Game of Thrones.
I'm in the same boat with Dave here. I think I'm not excited about this. Well, I'm going to watch it, but I'm not excited about it.
I think I got excited because I think I may have forgotten how much I liked Game of Thrones.
Well, the last season of Game of Thrones threw that to you.
I was fine with
you know
the
what I liked
Game
best about this, Nick, and that I kind of get what you're saying on that level, is that this is the first one I heard, I think, like an original score to. I wrote down the name of the dude who scored the Game of Thrones, Roman Dwaji, I've actually seen the live concert show that he put on where they show clips and play it live, and it's stunningly good music, and they have with some cool, weird, exotic instruments in the mix too.
Check out the culture on deck. Live classical music,
and I mean it's film music. That's classical music for dum dums.
I know it's the kind of classical music I like.
And I think this was included new music, which sounded to me in some ways like it could be something of a reorchestration of some of the themes of the original one. But some of it might also just be like that's his style. But in either case, it was distinctly Game of Thrones type music.
Oh, cool!
And you know that has one of the great opening pieces of music.
You know that guy also did Pacific Rim and Westworld, right?
No,
he's not shocking.
He's a really good composer. I really like his stuff.
Yeah. Pacific Rim had some great thematic to it.
Well, we don't have much time to wait for this one.
No,
I think it's like 2 weeks.
Sunday?
Was it this Sunday?
It's like Sunday or 2 weeks. It's very.
I think it's 2 weeks.
Okay,
a little longer. Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power had its new big official trailer.
I feel like you shouldn't have rings twice in your title.
Lord of the Rings rings?
Yeah, Lord of the Rings rings of power.
I heard you like rings. I'm gonna...
Yo, dog. Yo, dwarf.
Dave, what did you think of this trailer?
The same thing I thought of the House of the Dragon trailer.
Oh, really?
Which is to say, I'm interested. It showed a little bit more than I had seen previously, but it looked like Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah.
It looked like
which
people
is not a
like
bad thing.
It's samey. They're like, we thought we had vanquished the evil, but we had not. Like, there is an evil rising in the West.
I mean, isn't that just a trope of any fantasy at this point?
It is, but it's not just fantasy.
I need something in the trailer to sell me on it.
I think that's the issue with Star Wars, too, is if it's always Empires versus Rebel, then I lose interest. And I think it feels like you never get a victory. And I think that's the same thing, especially on a larger scale with, like, if that's Game of Thrones and that's Lord of the Rings, if the thing is, like, you're never going to have a victory, that basically it's always the same evil rising and you always defeat it. I get that, and there's a theme to be done there, but it does sort of feel pointless at some point.
You know the artist, cartoonist that we've had, Chris Schweitzer, out many a time?
Yeah.
He's done some great drawings and stuff of, like, Hobbits and Lord of the Rings. He can draw anything, but whenever he does them, he kind of just draws on the book initially, and he does his own thing with it. Well, he was talking about this, and people were asking him, are you excited about it, a few months ago? And I remember him saying that he would have liked to have seen some smaller untold tales. He wants to know about that hobbit living on the edge of the Shire trying to find some way to keep his farm going and having some smaller adventure, but not...
An anthology series instead.
Right. And now we always knew this was going to cover some big stuff. In fact, again, like, sort of mythic stuff. This is some time before, like, at least in some of the flashes, before there was, like, a sun.
Yeah, right? Isn't this like the end of the first age begin and start of the second age?
Isn't this the forging of the rings? Isn't this the...
It's going to cover that, yeah. Among things that are interesting in this trailer, although you kind of have to be a little in the know to know it, but like, you see Sauron in his like human form.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He looks a little bit like a grown-up... who's the evil kid in Harry Potter? Draco Malfoy.
Yeah, yeah. He still has the weird...
A little... Somewhere between Draco Malfoy, and Eminem. Like, he's gonna be... he's gonna be, like, a hot, scary guy.
Do you think Sauron's gonna be spitting fat rhymes?
I hope so.
You do see his little, like, claw talon...
Yep.
Yeah.
A creepier thing of him. What else? Galadriel seems to have some notable scenes.
Young Galadriel.
There was a big sea serpent at some point that was like gonna like smash some ship to pieces.
Forget more about the Harfoots.
Yep, those are the like branch of the hobbits that you see in
like
it.
Like the predecessors of hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think we're gonna get smaller tales in here, like different story arcs focusing on various things. I mean,
I agree. There's
just so much stuff to...
As far as, like, the trailer goes, though, aside from, like, that all looks neat, I know that there's people who have a much deeper knowledge than I do and have read the Silmarillion and are like, oh, well, that's recognizably that and that, who got more out of it than I did. But, I just got to see it in action.
There's a Balrog.
I mean, I guess. Was it in the trailer?
Yeah, it was the stinger at the very, very end after the Amazon logo.
Oh, yes, I may have missed it.
I missed it.
Oh, you stopped watching? Why would you stop watching?
It's the Amazon logo. It's not some Marvel movie.
Yeah.
I guess I need to see it. I did see somebody mentioning something about Balrogs, and I was like, maybe for like 0.5 seconds or something.
No, he shows up at the...
Hi, guys. Balrog here.
Come watch me in my new Woo show.
Again, this isn't very far. It's like a couple, like
it's,
a month. Or so?
Yeah, it's coming out in like a month. As you all know, I don't like elves.
Yeah,
or elf related.
Well, you're just not big on Lord of the Rings.
I'm not big on fantasy in general. Like D&D is a weird exception, and even that is because I've played D&D for so long. So I'm not super psyched for any of this except for D&D. But I'm gonna watch it, and it looks expensive.
Oh, I mean, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Sure, it's movie quality effects and stuff. Anyway, I continue to be hopeful for it, but I at this point, I just need to see the thing.
I am more excited for the thing that we had like a 2-second trailer for, and that is National Treasure: Edge of History. And all we see is the new girl who's the lead.
Are you really?
They also showed a picture that had both Riley and Harvey Keitel returning. Okay.
I'm kind of psyched for it, to be honest.
I lost interest based on this trailer.
Oh, interesting. But there's nothing in it.
There's both that is a drawback to it. But also, there's a weird thing. Whoever she is, she's, yeah. I guess, the new national treasure.
Yeah, right? She's national treasure.
She was passed on the right of being a national treasure.
Yep.
She's very pretty. She's a pretty woman. To the point where I'm like, she looked more model than, like, national treasure person. Like, Nicolas Cage... Nicolas Cage is not a traditionally handsome man. He's got his kind of own mystique.
Yeah.
It's that Jeff Goldblum weirdo mystique.
Yeah.
And all. But, like, I'm like, this looks like a pretty person, like, some kind of, WB or whatever.
CW,
thank you.
WB works, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's nowadays CW is a better thing. She looks like a CW hero.
Yeah. We'll see. I think there's going to be some stuff to like in here. I know the villain is going to be Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
I would be shocked if Nicolas Cage doesn't show up. At least
some sort of handing off the baton.
The other thing I'll say, Dave, is that having looked at... One of the reasons I'm more interested in this than I am in, say, Lord of the Rings is because Prime's overall track record is not great. Whereas Disney Plus's overall track record is pretty, like, Mighty Ducks and some of that stuff is way better than it has any right to be.
But there's also the Turner and Hooch's.
There's always the Turner and Hooch of it all.
So, I mean, Disney Plus is probably going to make
Randy,
it fun.
Randy, is that common wisdom about Amazon, or is that Randy wisdom?
I think that's common wisdom. But don't you? Overall. Sort of like,
overall,
their stuff's kind of boring.
They do have high highs.
Do they?
Yeah, boys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's...
They have one.
Never mind, are they Miss Maisel?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Miss Maisel. Yeah.
They do have high highs, but for the majority of it, it's usually just serviceable.
Yeah.
It's
enough that it feels like someone at the executive level is messing things up.
I don't think they're going to have that messed up with Lord of the Rings.
Well, because I've liked the I like National Treasure. I like National Treasure 2 a little less, but I like it. But I've
great
never thought it would.
Lincoln.
I don't know if, like, I feel like it will necessarily function without Nicolas Cage. I need his particular zeal, his craziness.
But what if this girl is like the Nicolas Cage of young women?
Guarantee she's not.
if they had done this from the viewpoint of, like, Sean Bean breaking out of prison and going on another heist or something, that'd be cool.
I wouldn't mind. I need to see the Sean Bean of this. I need to see the Riley of it. Riley is going to be in it.
Yes.
Anyway, I hope it's good, but that trailer didn't do nothing.
Fair enough.
I kind of agree with Dave. It didn't do anything for me.
It wasn't a trailer. I mean, it's nothing.
But I know enough behind the scenes, and I've followed that a little bit because I love National Treasure so much. I'm going to watch it.
What's it called? National Treasure Edge of History?
Edge of History. All right, let's talk about something else that Dave likes a lot more, though. Let's talk about Assassins. specifically John Wick 4. Which Keanu Reeves now said he's like, I'm going to make John Wick movies until you guys are tired of me making them.
And that's okay. If he enjoys making them, keep making them, sir. And making your Berserker
If he's going to make them until people are tired of making them, Dave's tired of it making them.
It turns out, though, I'm not all people.
Yeah.
The good news for me is, though, I also think Keanu as an actor is overrated.
You know what Keanu would say about you not liking John Wick? He'd be like,
that's perfectly all right.
That's cool, Dave.
Keanu is the person, yeah. I think, is a pretty dope dude. Yeah. And so, like, I wish him well. I keep making the movies. I don't want you to go poor.
Yeah, exactly.
I want him to just keep making money, although it is, like... those movies are a little gun fetishy, and I guess I can't say I'm, like, super excited about American Guns right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I wrote down one note on this when I was making a few trailer notes.
Okay, yeah.
I was a note on the gleaming dialogue of it when they introduce what's his name the from The Matrix. Lawrence Fishburne appears in this, and I was like, oh, so as they're getting to the point of gimmicky guest stars, all right,
oh, no.
Sure.
Lawrence Fishburne has been in it for...
Oh, has he?
Oh, yeah.
For a second, right.
Yeah, anyway, the awesome exchange was, you ready, John? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, well, okay, this is it.
But honestly, that feels very John Wick-y.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, honestly, John Wick is a man of very few words,
I've seen all three John Wick movies. I don't remember any of them.
I like the John Wicks, but I think they progressively get a little lesser with each one.
I know there's dogs in the third one.
Holly Berry with dogs.
I know that in the second one he fights Ruby Red?
Yeah, Ruby Rose.
Ruby Rose, that they fight him in a hotel room?
Yeah, it's like one of those
Adrian
house
Palicki betrays him in the first one because I love Adrian Palicki.
Yeah, she gets killed.
Oh,
yeah,
why do you do that, Adrian?
Yeah, she betrayed him.
More like John Wick.
I think I love the world of this. It's kind of just like the world building of the movies do that creates kind of this underbelly of the world that no one pays attention to.
It's a Hitman verse.
I know, it is a Hitman verse, and I know
my
that's
greatest
like
greatest nightmare.
But I love Lance Reddick. He's amazing in it. And
who's Lance Reddick?
He's what? Who is he?
Yeah,
it was you know from The Wire.
Okay,
apparently he's the only good part of the new Resident Evil thing on Netflix.
I've heard that, but I probably will watch it based on just that.
I saw some people were posting. I saw like this meme that had clips of Resident Evil that was like, I guess were considered some of the more egregious lines of dialogue, and it actually made me want to see it more. I was like, oh, that looks kind of funny and goofy, and then I was like, okay, I might actually try it out.
And also, who's the guy who plays the head of the hotel in New York? He was on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He was on.
I can never remember. Al Swearingen is Swearingen.
Yeah,
but it's Swearingen. Him.
Oh yeah,
Ian McShane. All these actors, I really enjoy their performances. So that kind of puts me in the seat.
Yeah, this is the thing we've learned, Nick, about you versus me and Dave. Is that
I know
you were like, if there's one good actor or something, you'll see it. And Dave,
yeah,
like,
what a waste of that actor.
We're like, everybody's made bad movies.
I also quietly wonder if Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise have a bet of how much stunts they can do. Because I feel like
they're both pretty hands-on.
They're both very hands-on in their thing. Tom Cruise might win just
Tom
based
Cruise
on insanity.
Just like, he box officed it this year.
Oh, he did. And then next year he's got Mission Impossible.
Also, he's a crazy person.
He's also a crazy person. Keanu Reeves is a nice person.
Yeah, if you're asking me which one I'd rather have a drink with, it's definitely Keanu Reeves.
I think Keanu would also be like, I'm really happy for Tom. I hope he enjoys his success.
Yep.
And I'd be like, oh, I feel bad for being a jerk ever at him. But like, also, I think like we're all people who like know that Tom Cruise might be a little bit loopy as a person, but he's a good actor.
Well,
he gives it his 110%. He does.
If you've seen Always Be My Maybe, you've seen Keanu Reeves playing himself. As like a, where all the things you say are sort of like backstabby.
Yes,
it's great.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Let's move on to another one where I know I'm going to be in the minority on this one: the Shazam Fury of the Gods trailer. I didn't love Shazam. This looks about like Shazam to me.
This is sort of the level of DC that I want. It's kind of comedic and funny and energetic. Because Zachary Levi is pretty amazing at being very energetic.
In the same, it has something of the same vibe in a slightly different way as, say, Ant-Man does for Marvel, which is to say a lot of surface comedy stuff.
I was a little weirded out they made a Fast and the Furious joke, but it kind of works.
I mean, since they literally do take as their own theme family, it kind of made sense that Billy would be a Fast and the Furious.
Then he's telling the joke to a person who's actually been in the Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh, who was that?
It was Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's what I caught too, was the meta.
I actually didn't get the meta. I just thought it was just like, oh yeah, he's just a pop culture nerd.
The villains in this one are the daughters of Atlas.
I was a little unclear on that.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing. Like, Billy, he has villains. Like, Mr. Mind was teased at the end of the first one. Why not use his villains? Why come up with new ones?
Nah.
Or will it turn out that he is like secretly is the power behind this?
Maybe so, and that's what they're doing. I don't know.
I don't know, because they might have thought like it's tough to sell a worm as a villain in a trailer.
Tell that to Doom.
I don't know if I have like highly anticipating this, but did it beat the Black Adam trailer?
Well, sure.
This is the DC that I want. I don't want mopey,
What's
dark,
funny is
depressing
that
superheroes.
They're connected, though.
They are connected.
Oh, I agree with you. I don't want mopey. I want better than this, though.
Oh, I thought this was fine.
That's the thing. It's a fun.
Is Jamon Hansu, is that who plays
the
wizard?
Wizard.
Yeah. He's always a good presence, and he looks visually cool.
Yeah,
I like their rethink on him.
That was great that they are going back on him being killed in the last one.
I liked the family having powers at the end of the previous one, so I'm hoping there'll be something kind of cool with that. But
I mean,
they clearly
are in it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, but it feels like they're definitely like they're playing second banana. I want them to be a full-on ensemble.
Oh, no, I mean, I think it's important that Shazam take the lead still.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to get like a good bit of screen time.
I think that's the biggest point of the movies, though. It was about family. I mean, not to be like Fast and Furious, but I like that aspect of the first one, and the mom and dad and the sort of all the kids are great.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it, don't get me wrong, it looks cute.
Yeah. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it just being okay.
I'm going to be disappointed until DC finally gets the level that Marvel is at. I want them to be at. They don't have to be the same thing, but I want them to get the level where I'm looking forward to what they're announcing. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, and instead it's always disappointment.
I'd like to see it just to shut Randy
up. Exactly. Shut me up, please. Please shut me up.
I can't expect them to ever get on Marvel's game.
Fortunes always change, you know, like, certainly in the comics, both of them, like, they volley back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, to some degree, though, like, DC, but Marvel caught the certain cool vibe in the 60s, and DC has never quite been able to take that back, but in the 80s, they kind of grabbed the edgy superhero people.
But that's what the Warner Brothers, to this day, is, like, kind of stuck their neck on, is, like, edgy, dark, mopey superheroes, and they can't seem to let it go.
Yeah, executives and stuff suck about that sort of stuff in most audiences.
So, when things like Shazam get out from under all the thumbs of that, I'm like, okay, well, this is fun, so... Yeah.
Unless it's, by the way, poorly reviewed, I'm sure I'll see this at the theater... Yeah. And I expect, like, this and Aquaman and stuff like that, those are both very fun movies for me to see in the theater. So I'll actually be pretty interested to see this. Again, if it got bad, really bad reviews, I'd probably give it a pass. But if it gets anything decent, I'll check it out. Yeah.
The DC thing I am excited about, and it is more in their sort of darker vein, but it works, is the Sandman.
Yes.
The Sandman trailer on Netflix. So when I watched this trailer... I was struck by how much stuff I recognized from the comics. I was struck how the looks are pretty good. But I was also... There's something... Netflix-y about it, where I was like, is this going to be like Lock and Key or one of those that I just like, it doesn't quite connect with me, or like Lucifer, where it's not quite, where it's a little bit too pedestrian for what Gaiman stuff usually is.
Right.
And that is kind of where I settled. But then I watched this video of Gaiman breaking it down and doing a comparison of like, not his own sense of humor into, but also like talking about what they took from the comics.
Mm-hmm. And they'll juxtapose the actual pages from the comics so you see what it's drawing from. Sometimes very directly.
But also talking about, like, the things that they changed and how... And it sounded much more like how that he was involved, or at least that he's approving of the process. And hearing that and seeing it compared directly, I'm like, you know what? This actually looks interesting. And I'm going to hold out some hope for it. I'm a little skeptical that Sandman can be adapted, because Sandman is a comic and really should be a comic.
Have either of y'all watched the clip that I have that has death in it?
I decided not to watch any of the clips. I want to watch it... I just watched the trailer, and because I know there's two clips out.
Because, like, none of the trailers themselves had that much impact on me, but the scene with Morpheus and Death, it's from The Sound of Her Wings? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, them in front of the fountain.
Issue 6 or 7, it's one of those.
Them in front of a fountain talking, isn't it?
I mean, that's the one that starts that way, but this is not that. That's not what the scene is. But basically, it's the one where he takes a day and goes around with her as she basically claims people as they die. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know the story from the comics, right? Yeah. It's one of the scenes from there, and it's super good. Like, I was like, man, that one scene... I guess it reminded me of, like, that sometimes I want trailers that show a little bit more. I sometimes miss those trailers... like either old school trailers, or sometimes they would do, like Shyamalan did this sometimes, like he would do a trailer for Signs or Sixth Sense that was just a scene, like a slightly edited version of like a 2-minute scene, and I love that stuff. Like if you can pull me in with one good scene, that's more interesting to me than a bunch of snippets of maybe neat stuff.
I think I was very pulled in by the fact that they're doing the story arc from the first Preludes and Nocturnes that has... Is it Doctor of Destiny? Or...
Yeah, that's...
With the stone
they're
diner
about,
and...
When he talks about the trailer, he breaks it down like... He is doing the first story arc. So it's like going to hell and meeting Lucifer. And then the diner issue, which is apparently episode 3. And then Sound of the Wings. Like, they're doing straight up like, these are the stories.
That diner sequence, that issue freaked me out.
Well, in the trailer... And then the breakdown, which I definitely recommend people watch. It's like 20 minutes.
I agree.
He stops it and he's like, yeah, he's like, this may be the darkest thing I've ever written. And it's like, the challenge we found is we wanted it to be dark, we wanted it to be true to the comics, but we also wanted people to come back and watch more of the show.
Yeah. So it's going to be...
Well, and you also have the Corinthian playing a much bigger role, so it seems.
That is my one gripe. Boyd Holbrook is great. I love him.
Yeah.
The Corinthian, to my mind, always had an English accent, and him being weird Southern, I don't know that I like.
Yeah.
And it may just be, like, they couldn't ask... Boyd Holbrook is a Southern... You get Southern
actually, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I ever saw the Corinthian as being English. I think I saw him as being, like, a Patrick Bateman type, creamy, detached, yuppie bastard.
The Southern thing is weird to me.
A little bit. Although, again, the delivery was good.
Yeah, yeah. When Gaiman was talking about it, he's like, and of course, playing Corinthian, we have Boyd Holbrook, who has an unfortunate genetic condition that he has eyes, he has teeth instead of eyes.
But did make him perfect for the role.
Made him perfect for the role, so.
Yes, his deadpan stuff on that was super good and reminded me that I always like watching Neil Gaiman speak.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Gwendolyn Christie's Lucifer looks amazing.
It's going to be good.
Yeah. He also, by the way, in the trailer I thought was going to talk about, he's like, people are like, you gender flipped this person. He's like, no, actually I didn't. He's like, Lucifer had no gender in the comics. So,
right, and like he's like, and also like in traditional lore,
yeah,
he said so. Something like personifying Lucifer specifically as a man is already a gender flip. Or
and he also talked about Joanna Constantine.
Yep.
So apparently Dan was right, and it's pronounced Constantine.
I think we knew that that is the English pronunciation.
I don't like it. But he talked about Joanna Constantine, played by Jenna Coleman, who looks great.
Yeah.
And I guess she's going to have sort of an expanded role. And I guess he's like, they're like, you gender flipped John. And he's like, no, I knew that if I put in John Constantine for this one thing, that everybody would be focused on that, and then you have to explain, oh no, this is his ancestor, and it just made sense to just introduce the character right away.
Right, and then she is from the comics.
Yeah, so. She's from the comics.
Yeah, that's like, so. she's not gender flipped, she's just an ancestor of the Constantine
like
we know.
They're not, like, forgetting anything. Like, Merv is in there.
And Merv is, who's voicing Merv? It's Mark Hamill.
Oh, it's Mark Hamill.
He did mention, like, there's some DC things that, you know, like, they're not going to use Martian Manhunter, who happened to be in the Justice League at the time. There's a few things like that have been slightly tweaked, or probably some other character will take on the role of making those things happen.
But he made mention of, he said, you know, in some cases it will work, and I think, I wonder if he's nodding if they keep going to doing the Furies and doing Lita Hall or whatever her name is.
I don't know.
Because she's such a big character. She doesn't have to be tied to the Justice Society.
Yeah.
But it definitely felt like a thing where he may want to use that actual character.
Right.
But I guess we'll see.
I'm very excited.
I'm excited for this too. I'm curious to see. I think.
Do we know when this is hitting?
August 2nd. Yeah, it's like a week from now.
Netflix show with a date? What?
Yeah.
All 8 episodes thrown out at the same time? Yeah. Or 10 episodes, however they're going to do?
It's going to be a binge. Netflix also has a new Interview with a Vampire. I did not watch this trailer as I just. There's a friend of mine who posted about it, and he said, kind of what I think my take would have been, which is like, he's like, it looked like a very good trailer for a type of vampire I'm just not interested in.
It's not Netflix. It's AMC.
Oh, well, it's going to be boring then.
Yes. That was my takeaway from the trailer a little bit.
Well, I thought it looked pretty good.
It looked okay.
Let me ask you this, because I've never read the book, and I've seen the movie, like, once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
And I liked it, but I don't have strong feelings about it. But it kind of what it does... Maybe because there's been enough remove, like literally decades at this point since I've seen the movie, it kind of intrigued me more than I thought. Is this based directly on the book? Is it like an expanded version of what the movie did?
No, because it looked like all the elements were there that they both did in the book and the movie. I mean, like Lestat,
but it would still be like an expanded. Probably it would probably show more stuff from the book maybe than the
probably
movie did.
So. The movie was actually solid.
I'm just sure it must have cut stuff.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, why does this series exist then?
Because it's time for vampires to rise again.
I know, but you like vampires.
I do. So I will probably watch this. Zombies. I just thought there was no panache to this trailer.
Eric Bogosian is the interviewer. What do you do? Do you hate Eric Bogosian?
I do not.
I didn't know he was still alive.
I didn't know he was either.
You know what I think it is? He played the guy, the radio, talk radio guy
talk
who got killed.
Yep.
And I think in my head, Eric Bogosian died when he played Puck Radio.
I don't know if you know, that's an Oliver Stone movie. It's very intense.
Yeah, it's extremely method. He went and got killed for Big Talk Radio.
I don't play around. When you do this, use live ammunition.
Circling back a little bit to Tom Cruise, though,
his
version of the stop is kind of what I wanted. It was a little brash. It was a little kind of in your face.
Yeah.
The person playing Lestat in this is very subdued and kind of is definitely horrifying. But it wasn't kind of what you expected.
Didn't the movies rein in a little bit of the queerness of the books?
They did.
They did.
And I'm betting they're not going to.
They're not going to.
I didn't get the vibe that they were in the trailer. But yeah, what is it, like 1910 New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
I'd forgotten, like, I was like, oh, that's a cool setting. I don't know. I was more interested in it than I expected based on this.
I will watch it, but AMC's track record for me personally is not good.
Not so good with the Breaking Bad.
Yeah, they have high exceptions, but in general, they're not great.
Well, no, I don't watch either of those shows.
Yeah,
but it's just usually just
you're
kind
only missing out on some of the greatest shows of all time.
You haven't watched much of Breaking Bad either.
I've watched enough to know that people say that about it.
You and I have watched the same amount of Breaking Bad.
I'm just saying their reputation. I mean, like, what else do they have? They did Walking Dead, right?
Walking Dead, yeah.
Right, but people love that.
Yep. Yeah,
people love Walking Dead, like Breaking Bad, love Better Call Saul.
Yes, that's true.
I don't know what else they make.
I mean, they have Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Yeah, they have critics' darlings, but they have made a lot of horror
shows. I don't know how many times I tried watching the first season of Mad Men. I think I tried to watch it like 4 or 5 times.
Okay, it'll catch you if you just try to keep going. It took me so many times to get into Mad Men, and here's the funny thing. I don't remember most of Mad Men at this point. Like, I don't know that I'm like, kind of like The Sopranos. I'm like, I guess I'm glad I watched it, but I don't know that I really loved it.
Yeah.
It's like, unlike something like Justified or The Americans, which I loved, yeah, it just didn't stick with me as much.
This one, we'll see.
Then we got Star Trek stuff, which Dave will talk about extensively in his podcast, Tech Trek.
Yep.
Probably already has.
No, I was, we wanted to be on the ball on that, but that meant talking about it on Saturday when I was busy, and Sunday when I worked, and so Fathery did that with some guests and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we have talked about it, so I just wasn't there for it.
We got what?
Picard? Star Trek Picard.
Yep.
So this is the third and final season.
Right, and is known to be kind of probably a bit of closure for the next-gen crew.
Yep.
It's probably the last hurrah for them, but yes, it has, like, the original crew of the Next Generation.
Yep. And we see little bits of them updated and their new looks. And
it's kind of a stylized little teaser where you just see them saying a few words that are kind of maybe sort of just setting up a tone, I think, for the series. That's a mixture of, like, there's like a slightly dark look to the visuals because literally they're in shadows, but like they're wearing their Starfleet uniforms. The music is kind of starting to swell, like there's a little bit of hopefulness to it. And the character, what they are mostly saying, sometimes it's revealing about who they are, but there's a sort of hopeful vibe to it. Where, like, the first person you see is Geordi, and he's saying that, like, his time with Starfleet made him a better person and a better father.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Geordi's got kids. Cool. I gotta find out about this.
No, he just has pets. He has 30 cats.
I mean, that sort of would fit Geordi.
He's named Worf, all after fictional holographic girlfriends.
Worf appears with his now white beard, snow white beard. They're calling him not a silver fox, but a silver targ. That's the Klingon dog.
Yeah. Worf looks like granddaddy. He's looking good.
He's also got Klingons look particularly cool when they get like the streaks of white in their hair or like silver, like he's got. Yeah. And he's wearing not like a batleth, but a something else slung over his back, which is like I think for the same guy who created the batleth design. It's another Klingon weapon.
Cool.
I don't know what it is. And it's slightly weird. This is pointed out to me that one or two of them are. Most of them are in their current Starfleet uniforms.
Yep.
But a few of them are in plain clothes.
Yeah.
Like Seven, I think, was. And she had a
Seven's not.
But like, maybe Raffi or maybe Crusher. Yeah.
Well, Raffi's not super proud. I mean, she wound up with Starfleet in Season 2. But she was specifically anti-Starfleet for most of her time.
I don't think Crusher was in it.
Crusher was not in a uniform either.
Neither one or two of them aren't. Troy. But Seven had a phaser, and somebody said, although the way that it was edited, I couldn't really see it, that Riker had, like, a phaser rifle or something like that.
I don't remember that, but...
I have no idea what the story is going to be.
Well, I wonder if they're going to pick... I mean, the Borg being incorporated into the Federation seems to be...
Oh, that's right. It did set that up, and it set up that there was, like, some sort of wormhole opening that the Borg were sort of trying to guard against.
Yeah.
That now that they're allying
threat that they're dealing with.
I think there is a known big bad of some sort, and I can't remember if it comes from Trek history. I think it's one that maybe does.
Right, that would make sense.
So you're saying I should finish watching Season 2?
I thought Season 2, for all that it had its ups and downs, was the finale. I thought was the strongest episode of Picard so far.
I agree. The finale made it kind of all worth it, and there was good stuff along the way.
Yeah. And the other trailer we got is the Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, which I think starts in a couple weeks. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's coming really soon.
Lower Decks, right. So Lower Decks,
Is it's a love hate with this? The more I think,
it's not even a love hate. It's a this isn't for me.
Like slash indifference.
I'm not gonna say I hate it, but I do kind of like it. Sort of manic style is something I generally hate, and it's just a little too quippy and all that stuff for me, and too nerdy reference-y,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So I never plugged into it. Other people handle that on our podcast. I just bow out of it and I go take a nap.
Yeah. I came to really enjoy it. It took a while to hook me.
Yeah.
But I don't love it. The people who love... So many people
Some people, it's their favorite current track.
And the thing is, that's fine. But some of these people turn their nose up at, like, Discovery and Picard, and they're talking about how uneven they are and how Lower Decks is... I'm like, no, no, no. They're all uneven in their own ways. Lower Decks is so goofy.
I guess in that way, it's its shield.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it doesn't take anything too seriously, although it has serious moments.
Yep. You're right. They're like, it's just fun. And I'm like, but why can't Discovery have fun?
Yeah, right. I agree.
Anyway.
We just did our 200th podcast, by the way, the other day for Text Trek.
Yeah.
And in it, we were kind of doing a celebration of all things current generation, new Trek, as some people call it. Stuff from the last 5 years, roughly.
Yep.
And talking about it, and I was like, I was going over, like, what are some of my favorite characters and favorite episodes? And I was reminded of a lot of the good times with Discovery and... sometimes Discovery frustrates me, but I was reminded how good it can be, and how much I like it at times.
And I really like New Trek stuff for the most part.
Maybe 5 years from now, Lower Decks will come back to you, and you'd be like, "This is amazing."
No, probably not.
I don't think so.
even with the stinger at the end of this trailer,
The trailer's fun. They're going to go to Deep Space Nine, and that looks fun. They're also said they're doing a crossover with a Strange New Worlds, which got to be time travel, right?
Yeah, it would have to be because they're just set apart by like a few decades.
But the overall theme of this season, and it's funny, I've watched all of Star Trek Lower Decks. I don't remember. Did season 2 end with the captain being accused of something?
I don't watch Lower Decks, so I have no idea.
So
she's in space prison or whatever.
There's like apocalypse thing that happened, and there's like that she's like sabotaged them. I know she's been set up. I don't know exactly how.
They've made the Pakleds like a big thing.
Yeah. So she's on trial, and the Cerritos is in dry dock, and so the Lower Deckers basically have to steal the ship. It's a very Star Trek 3-4 style thing.
Stealing the ship is a Star Trek thing now.
Yeah, so they're going to go steal a ship and go around being there, you know, trying to find evidence their captain's innocent. It's a fun central...
AKA Mariner's mom.
Yeah. it's a good central theme.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it'll be fun. I'll enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it in the same way I look forward to it always, which is, this will be fun, but I don't love it as much as everybody else. And I wish I loved it as much as everybody else loves it.
Same.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Marvel, because that's what's left. This is the thing I was the most excited about.
And the 75 announcements that you were most excited
about was Dungeons & Dragons?
This is what I was most excited about before.
Oh, okay.
And then
Dungeons & Dragons came in...
was a shocker.
With Led Zeppelin, and you're like, what?
Yep,
anyway, exactly but Marvel stuff,
Marvel stuff is the other thing that I'm really excited about. The two things I'm really, really excited about are both Marvel. So they revealed that the end of Phase 4 is going to be Black Panther: Wakanda Forever,
which premieres in November.
Premieres in November, and we got our first trailer for it, and it's phenomenal.
The trailer is just emotional and resonant with Bob Marley cover.
Great Bob Marley cover.
And then it leads into I'm blanking on the other song.
I forget, but it's really good. The music's good. But
Kendrick Lamar.
We see Ironheart.
Yep.
We see their new...
Ironheart?
Yeah, that's Ironheart.
Yeah, Shuri's meeting with...
Yeah, when they see the lab and they do the sort of shake, that's Riri Williams.
I may be the person who had the most experience with this trailer.
Did you only watch it once?
I've watched it a couple times.
Okay, because I loved it, and then I watched it again. And I liked
it was weirding me out because I was like, I don't know what the story is, who the lead is, and like, if I didn't know that those were Atlanteans and stuff like that, I'd be like... there's some fighting going on, but I don't know who they are.
I think they did a good job of, like, because I think that the thing they don't want to do is they don't want to come out and say how they're dealing with Chadwick Boseman being gone.
Right. There is a clear tone early on of sadness, right?
Yeah.
It looks like an almost funeral with everyone dressed in white. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then that great speech by Angela Bassett, which, by the way, Angela Bassett being his mom, they nailed that because she has to do a lot of heavy lifting.
Well, now she's queen.
She's queen, yeah.
And she's taking over the throne, and she looks
phenomenal.
Great.
And then we get one shot of Black Panther. We don't see who it is.
No.
Which I thought was very clever.
Is it possible, because we knew that, like, Shuri is one of those possibilities, is it possible that it could be a woman?
It's probably Shuri. It's almost certainly Shuri.
I don't think it is.
You don't think so?
No. I think it...
Also, by the way, that could be somebody who's, like... that could even be, like, a pretender to the throne, or somebody who's, like...
Maybe, but it looked like the Panther costume and everything.
I'm putting my all my money on Nakia.
Oh, that'd be cool, too.
Because she has the skills. She's the assassin.
And she's not an anti-vaxxer, so...
Right. So that is my hope, even though we do see... they have released a wave of toys images, so we've seen... no Black Panther, so we have no idea that... But
this is why a couple things.
I know it's really hard.
I don't want to hear it.
I mean,
spoilers.
I just get. I got a really good look at what Namor looks like, and in the trailer, he's awesome.
Yeah,
I love the Aztec thing.
Are they Aztec or Mayan? Are they Mayan?
I think Mayan is what I heard. I could be wrong though.
But it's a cool. It's a really cool.
Essentially, Mesoamerican sort of themes.
Yeah. I love the idea of, like...
Do we know, like any... Does anybody know any of the specific story behind that? Nope. Like, how Atlantis will be, like, a lost colony of, like, the Mayans instead or something
I think that's the plan, but we don't really know. But it's, like... Again, I don't want to know that much, so I'm kind of steering away from this.
Yeah, ready to be surprised.
But I think the notion of Atlanteans versus Wakanda is really interesting.
Yeah.
The Riri Williams... When they established that thing at the end of...
we see her literally hammering out her Iron Heart.
In homage to Iron Man. To Tony. Yeah.
By the way, those are two... Atlantis and Wakanda are both places that are... what do you call it? They're like monarchies, like high-tech monarchies.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, in kind of like a science fiction way. It does sort of make sense to... I don't know for them to fight, but that is the Marvel tradition.
Well, they've done that in the Black Panther comics.
For sure.
Yeah. But also, when they at the end of Black Panther, when they're setting up that new thing in Los Angeles, I had always wondered if Riri Williams was going to come out of that program, and now it feels like she did.
She's
probably friends with Shuri from there, and that's why she knows her when she goes to the lab. And I think she's going to wind up building the armor to help defend Wakanda against the Atlanteans.
Yep.
There's all kinds of cool stuff that's going on there. We get just a tiny bit of M'Baku.
Yep, M'Baku is in there.
To see.
We get a little bit of Okoye.
Yep.
We also get, I can never remember the other Dormilaje. It looks like there's a lot of Dormilaje, but the one that was in Captain Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Or the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah.
It looks super cool. I'm very excited about it. I'm glad to get that teaser.
I think what I was really impressed with is that I am super sad we're not getting like Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther, but there are so many good characters in Wakanda, and this is just a reminder.
They did
that
do
so
a lot
many...
of world building and created a tapestry to work with. I still like. I mentally can't quite imagine how, because they just did the origin movie of him. It's so crazy that the next one will not only feature him, but will be have to tell the story of his demise.
That's not their fault.
No. But it's just like. I don't know, like, I have this weird cognitive dissonance, like, it's going to break my brain to have seen an origin movie for a hero, and then the next movie is, like, the morning movie.
But I imagine it was very, I mean, I know from their words, I guess, at the panel, is, like, extremely hard to do this movie. It was very kind of, like, you know, sad, like, utterly sad.
Yeah.
But I feel like Ryan Coogler has brought together a movie that I think will... Based on just trailer, it looks great.
It should be at once a tribute to Chadwick Boseman and carrying forward the legacy he set up. And
side note, I've been listening to a podcast, Mark Maron's podcast. Yeah. He interviewed Ray Liotta, and when he was making Goodfellas, his mother passed away during the making of it. And it was like right before what would be his first big scene in the movie. And, like, you wouldn't know it watching Goodfellas, right? And it's just interesting, like, it, you know, but like, in its weird way, might have added, like, some texture to his character, or at the very least, but it's just interesting how people will press on through tragedy, like losing both.
I've heard some people say, though, that Phase 4 has been sort of rocky, and there's been a lot of kind of ups and downs.
Yeah.
And sort of to end it on this punctuation note that is Black Panther, I think is going to be like... Okay, we're not lost. We're going to go into here. We're jumping into Phase 5, and we're going to go into some very unique places.
There's two more Phase 4 things where we talk about 5 and 6.
Yes.
She-Hulk Attorney at Law, which I wasn't going to watch the trailer for. And I'm super glad I did, because, first of all, they fixed a lot of special effects. They're going to keep working on them. But also, we get a much better sense of what it's like. Her and Bruce have such a fun relationship.
Yes.
And I like what I've seen of their Titania.
Yeah.
Is that who that
Jamila
is?
Jamila,
yeah.
Is she the one who...
She apparently, they're going to do a little bit of a... Because in, you know, in the comics, she shows up in Secret Wars. And
right. Becomes,
in this, I think it's basically like, she was the sort of tall, beautiful rival to Jen, like, throughout high school and stuff.
Okay.
And now, all of a sudden, Jen's got this sort of, this tall, powerful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I think it's going to make Jamila Jamil's character snap a little
bit.
And that's a good idea.
I mean, does she have power? Like, where does she get her power?
I don't know. It looks like she bursts through a wall.
Yeah,
she's got powers.
maybe from the power broker. Maybe they'll do that. I don't know.
They did mention something about lots of people popping up with powers and stuff in it.
I mean, the power broker's still in play.
Power broker would be an interesting thing to do. I mean, they could touch on that. I assume that'll show up in Cap 4, but...
Probably.
But anyway, the thing that really... There were two things that really got me in this trailer. One, she talks to the camera.
Yep.
I needed to know whether they were going to do the fourth wall breaking, and they are, and that's fun.
People are going to say she pulled a Deadpool.
Uh-huh, I know. And then the other thing, is, of course, is that Daredevil shows up at the end.
Yes.
Which is great.
So Charlie Cox is back, and a lot sooner than we anticipated, honestly.
I mean, it makes sense to get him in with the lawyer show.
It does. Yeah. It does.
But with in a brown and yellow costume, which I
think
is fantastic.
As close as, I guess, with this, well, basically it's their Daredevil yellow.
It was a very fun trailer, and I'm super excited for it.
I remember hearing, like, on the set, and, like, people grumbling, like, this is going to be the worst, like, trailer.
Everybody always says
I know,
that.
But I felt like that was a little more prominently put out there than a lot of the other ones, and I see this trailer, and I'm like... This looks
Wait,
like...
Who said...
It was just kind
internet,
of a running rumor
internet,
kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The internet.
They always... There's always the, this is the one that's not going to be any good. And I think what's going on is, it does sound like, to some extent, if you're not one of the stars, if you're one of the, you know, craft services people or the VFX people, that it's not fun to work on Marvel movies right now.
Yeah.
And I get that, and I respect that. And if people want to be mad and not go see Marvel movies before that, I can totally respect that.
I agree.
But... I think that may be where the buzz is coming from. Like, the disgruntled VFX artists may be, like, venting out to their friends, and then that goes out to the people who are looking for Hollywood gossip, and it gets translated into...
I've also... This is something that we've always seen over the years, sort of managing, running the comic shop and stuff, which is that sometimes when people get... When they're personally tired of it, then, like, all they can do is bellyache.
Yeah.
Like, because they just... They're not interested.
Yeah.
Instead of just stepping away from it, they've got to be like, Marvel's lost it.
Yeah.
And I'm like... Because, like, that's kind of where I am. Like, I'm just not in a big Marvel mood lately, and, like, the She-Hulk trailer was fine, but it didn't do much for me.
Yeah.
But, I don't think it looked bad or anything.
Yeah. Well, you've always been more casual in the Marvel Universe.
And I do think Mark Ruffalo's Hulk is too much of a big stoner doofus man.
I like big stoner doofus Hulk.
His airborne thing was funny.
I thought it was a little much. Yep. I thought it was a little much.
Yeah, he does not care for humor. Then there was the trailer, the one other thing, I Am Groot.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just shorts.
Yep.
It looks cute.
It does.
Yeah, I mean...
It's Groot saying, I am Groot a lot.
I think that's going to get old fast, but we'll see what
that's
happens.
That's why they're shorts.
I mean, I would like 5-10 minutes, I assume.
Yeah, I think it'll be
sort
like
of like the Baymax.
I did watch this, and I actually thought it looked like better done than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
I could have done without the fart joke.
Yeah,
But... like, the animation actually looked weirdly high quality for what it was.
It's Disney Plus, you know.
And, like, as little five to ten minute, largely visual shorts, I think that they can probably get away with I Am Groot by telling, like, I assume it'll be kind of like the Pixar silent, more silent type movie, intros and stuff like that. And I suspect they'll do a good job with it.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right, let's talk Marvel lineup. Let's talk about Phases 5 and 6, because they gave us... This is what I was waiting
for. So they gave
for.
Us all of Phase 5.
All of Phase 5 and barely any of Phase 6, but the Phase 6 they gave us is very exciting.
Yes.
So Phase 5, which we've known about, but they sort of locked a few things down.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, there were trailers for this that we didn't get to see.
There were sizzle reels, right. I think. There weren't trailers.
Well, I think James Gunn specifically said that the FX on Guardians 3 wasn't done.
Yeah.
He's like... It was enough to show in Hall H, but I don't want to have it rewatched over and over again.
Right.
He didn't want the She-Hulk thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I get that.
Yeah. Fans
but
are dumb.
I know...
fans ruined everything.
The actor who's playing the main villain came out in full costume. I did watch that.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
The main villain of what?
Guardians.
Who's the main villain? Or is it a secret?
I mean, it's High Evolutionary.
That's right.
Okay, yeah.
That's right. I did see that. And I'm pretty psyched about that.
Yeah, it felt very... gun.
Yeah. So launching phase five is Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania, which introduces Cassie Lang as Stinger. They're going with her MC2 version.
Oh, is it Stinger? Yeah. I heard back and forth between Stature and Stinger.
I mean, maybe she's going to be called Stature, but Stinger's a better name.
Stinger's a better name.
It is.
And the costume is a purple version of her, like, it's her Stinger costume, which, by the way, there's a picture that went out, I think, who does the movie tickets? Fandango.
Yeah.
Posted a picture of Ant-Man, Wasp, and Stinger, and they look great together.
Oh, I need to find that pic.
I posted it to my shared on my Facebook. Dave, why don't you follow everything I post on Facebook?
Randy, the only person who might sometimes post more than me on Facebook is you.
I will say, though, you have loved the Ant-Man movies.
Yep.
I have, yeah. I'm certainly on board.
I'm
at a point where, like, there's, like, I don't feel the need to see every single Marvel movie, but I'd probably watch all the Ant-Man stuff at this point.
What's interesting is I think this is going to be very important to the overall. I mean,
yeah.
Ant-Man in general, other than setting up for Civil War, he really hasn't. He's been on the outskirts a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, he was vital in Endgame.
So yeah, in a way,
he's been doing podcasts and tell-all books. Yeah, that's what he's been doing.
I also like that sometimes the Marvel Universe shifts in ways you don't expect. Like, yeah. I don't think anybody was quite expecting them to do with the Atlanteans what they've done.
No,
and that was a cool decision, I think. And I think they'll probably surprise us with some other stuff in Black Panther.
Yep.
And I like the idea that, yes, suddenly out of nowhere, Ant-Man takes prominence. It's a kind of a cool thing to do. Why you kind of set up expectations for he's the small homebody hero in 1 and 2, and then he does a big, like, something notable happens in the third
one.
Well,
we do know the big thing is that Kang is the villain.
Yeah.
And that's not nobody.
Yeah.
And in fact,
Kang is the villain of Ant-Man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's going to, I guess, be kind of a recurring villain.
It's called Quantumania, so they're definitely going to go more into the
quantum
realm and time travel and all that kind of stuff, which I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Then we get Secret Invasion, which is going to be on Disney Plus.
Which I know they did show us.
They showed us Sizzle Reel for that, and it's got Nick Fury and Skrulls and...
I'm trying to remember some of the other cast members.
I don't remember
that...
either.
What's interesting is that their Secret Invasion, like, I don't know if I ever read all of Bendis's Secret Invasion.
Why would you have?
But, I read House of M.
So the thing about Secret Invasion, the concept is good.
It's all the execution. That it's basically, they have like a, I believe, an almost religious directive.
Yeah, there's like
a Secret
cult
Invasion.
Within the scrolls that is like, it's the queen, their queen is like a religious cult or something.
Which kind of goes a little butts heads with what we've seen of the scrolls.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
It's going to be very different.
The movies have presented a sympathetic scrolls.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, like, if they're in the awkward position of, like, well, we have some, like, an extremist cell or cult or a religious cult or whatever, where you might actually end up with some Skrulls working to help humans, some Skrulls working against them.
I don't see how religious zealots, alongside of persecuted people, being lumped in together. There's no real world applications of that kind of thing.
These superhero movies are basically about nothing.
If we get, I mean, Sam Jackson, I assume what's his name is going to be coming
back.
Ben Mendelsohn as Talos.
I assume so as well.
He has to.
He's great.
He's my favorite.
Maria Hill. I know she's back.
Maria Hill's
Cobie Smulders is back.
The first two Marvel things are the things that Dave actually likes.
So I'm excited for this. We'll see what they can do on a Disney Plus budget.
Yep.
Which I know sometimes hinders.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, like I don't know, like, what all...
So have I. I mean, I'm not...
Did Secret Invasion get to the point of, like, having, like, big spaceships and stuff pew-pew?
Yeah, and I hope they won't do that in this. I hope it'll keep it smaller.
I think infiltration is actually kind of, I think, more interesting.
Yeah.
I think
but with a few big pew-pew set pieces.
Yeah.
They'll rethink it.
And then Guardians 3.
Yep.
Which, the biggest news, I mean, we knew they'd cast Adam Warlock.
Yes.
And I like the guy who plays him. I like that actor.
Yeah.
High Evolutionary was news to me. I don't think I knew that before going in.
Yeah.
And then the big news, the most important news, after Gunn had said he'd never do this.
Yeah.
They cast an actress to I think an actress.
It is.
To motion capture and voice Cosmo the Space Dog.
Oh, interesting.
They're going to get Bosch me.
And also, this is apparently going to be about Rocket's origins.
Yeah. Which I think they're going to tie a lot of
Is Cosmo the Space Dog going to become more humanoid, like in the same way Rocket is?
No,
maybe I bet he's going to be Cosmo the Space Dog.
Why would you have motion capture? I mean, I guess because...
you don't want to have a dog. You can't do an animal actor. You want
Right. A person can kind of imitate a dog's movements, and then they can map a dog's framework or whatever over
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I feel like they're going to tie a High Evolutionary into a lot of these people's origins.
Oh, that makes
origins.
So much... And Cosmo as well. That would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Since he's, I'm sure, insane and likes to...
Right. Was that like an early test of his? Take a Russian space dog.
And, yeah,
was, see what he can do.
Give him telepathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm excited for it.
One of the first comics I had was a story where the High Evolutionary challenges Hulk because he wants to commit suicide, which he does in the issue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I guess that's the end of the High Evolutionary forever.
Nope.
As it turns out, it was not. But by the way, that was a great comic.
High Evolutionary commits suicide so many times.
But I because of that story, because of how good it was, I like the High Evolutionary as a character.
We'll see what the High Evolutionary does, and if he sticks around, if like his heat responsible
time
for
mutations.
Wondegore.
By the way, we're well over an hour, and we're just talking news, so it's gonna be a long podcast, and we're probably not gonna have a chance to talk about all our topics.
Yeah,
just so y'all know,
we'll get in on that next week.
But Echo, which I don't have a lot to say about, except that we know that both Kingpin and Daredevil are gonna be in it. Loki season 2.
Yay!
Looking forward to that. The Marvels coming in July, which I'm super excited for. It's two of my favorite characters.
That's a movie,
a
show.
Yeah, it's a movie. I'm excited about Monica Rambeau and Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
Carol Danvers, I'm fine with. But really, it's the other two that I'm excited about. Blade, which I think is a movie.
It is. It's a full-on movie.
I'm surprised they don't do that as a show.
No, I think you want to pay homage to Blade, which did kind of start
but
the...
I wonder what their Blade is going to... Like, we don't know a lot about what they're going to do. Like, they haven't done a lot of vampires in this universe.
Well, they've showed Blade tying in with the Ebony
Turtles.
Blade
yeah.
and Black Knight.
Yeah.
I'm all for the supernatural in the
When did
MCU.
They show that?
That was
the end of
Eternals.
But Blade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He's a voice.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Is he but clearly identified as Blade?
Yes.
Yeah, well, no, he's not. He's just... We know it's the guy who's playing Blade.
Okay.
And he's talking to Black Knight when he's looking at the Ebony Blade.
Interesting team up. Yeah, that is kind of an unusual combo.
But it's not the horror aspect. I mean, I guess with Doctor Strange we got a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it would make sense to do just as far as like it's a tone they haven't dealt with a lot in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Secret Invasion might have like some horror-y elements, maybe.
But I think it'll be interesting because I think tying him with Black Knight and the Ebony Blade and that kind of thing may make Blade supernaturally in some other ways and not just vampires.
Right.
Which I think is probably wise.
Yeah, I think
it's good. Basically, if he's half vampire is his origin, but he's not just a vampire slayer.
Yeah, if he's kind of like...
It's going to make a lot more sense when they bring him to Avengers. Thanks a lot, Jonathan, or Jason Aaron, for that. Because he's going to be in the Avengers. All these people are going to be in the Avengers.
I mean, it's more than likely.
Who, Blade?
Blade, Kamala Khan... I think they're gonna do is
I mean that sort of works out in the sense that in the movies have a big difference from the comics in that the actors by definition are gonna just have to age out of it.
Kamala
and
Khan's
so they will need fresh blood.
Young Avengers are the champions
but
or whatever
I think Kamala should go and be
in the X-Men.
I think so too.
I think Young Avengers is going
she
to
should
be the
Kitty
Avengers.
Pryde / Jubilee / Rogue 2.0 and be the entry point.
I have a theory about this but I can't talk about it until we get to the Avengers stuff.
Okay.
So Ironheart, which we know she's going to spin out of the Wakanda stuff.
She's awesome.
Show.
I am excited.
Agatha Coven of Chaos, which I don't know what they're going to do with that.
TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, they changed the title of that.
Yeah.
It was House of Harkness, and now it's the Coven
of Chaos.
Of Chaos.
Yeah.
Coven of Chaos is a good title.
Yeah,
sure.
Don't know much about it.
Chaos is like...
Well,
like,
hopefully that means we'll get Scarlet Witch back.
Maybe. I don't know. More of the magic side of things. Daredevil Born Again... That's just mean, by the way, using that title. 18 episodes, which I'm not...
Did I understand that they've already kind of covered Born Again as a story in, like, Daredevil season 2
so
or 3
sort of
or something?
Did. They sort of covered Born Again. They used Nuke in Jessica Jones season 2 or 1.
Hmm. Yeah, it was season 2.
Did he have the crazy flag?
No, he was not a very good
no.
So, I think we're going to get these characters and actors portraying what they did in Netflix, but I think it's going to be different.
Do you think they're going to use the Netflix stuff as multiverse stuff?
Yes.
I think that'd be smart.
Because I think we're getting a new version of Daredevil that's still Charlie Cox, which leads credence to John Krasinski playing Mr. Fantastic, but not that Mr. Fantastic.
I think that's where they're going to go, too, and I think that's a smart way to just, like, oh, the continuity that you liked, it is continuity, it's just another universe. I think that's a good way to have your cake and eat it, too. We'll see if that works.
I think it will.
I'm nervous about
Well, it does make, for the average person, it makes for a little bit of weird explaining to do. Like, oh, I love the Daredevil Netflix. Oh, but it's not who the Daredevil is in the movies?
Yeah. Well, people are going to get it anyway, so who cares?
We are going to get 18 episodes of Daredevil.
I don't know that I want 18 episodes. I hope that they know what they're doing. But also, it can't... I think Daredevil Born Again is a double meaning.
It is.
They're referring to Born Again, but also it is Daredevil gets another shot.
Yeah. Because right. I think it's more that
it may just
thing.
Be a title.
Because right. much as I love the Born Again story, and I'm sure they will do reference to some of it,
yep.
it's not 18 episodes of TV.
Sure.
No.
And so I'm curious what they're going to do, curious who all comes back. You said you've heard rumors that it's also going to be Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
Which I am super on board with both of those people.
But if they're going to do that, why wouldn't they do Iron Fist as well? I know Iron Fist for this, but why wouldn't they recast and do a new Iron Fist?
And they might. They might do that. Yeah. Who knows?
I it would make sense to bring in Immortal Iron Fist and do that kind of thing.
I'm just super excited to see more Charlie Cox as Daredevil. He is a great Matt Murdock.
Yes. I was skeptical of this.
I'm curious if they'll bring that same actor for Foggy or if they'll
recast. He was good as Foggy.
He was great. Yeah. And Karen Page and how all that is going to fall out.
I don't know how much they're going to do with that either. I'll be curious to see. This is a pretty notable thing.
I'd personally skip over Frank Miller's porn star thing for Karen.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Yes.
And they hadn't done that, and I'm glad they didn't. Captain America New World Order closes out Phase 5.
Am I not wrong that that was the name of the first volume of his book, Sam Wilson's book that... Spencer it did?
Might have been. I don't remember.
Calling a New World Order is tweaking the noses of QAnon.
Well, I assume it's going to be up against Ultimatum or one of those guys. Not Ultimatum, but one of his Secret Empire.
Yeah, people are hypothesizing Red Skull again, and I'm
I don't think they'll do Red Skull.
I don't think they will either, but maybe.
But I don't know. Anyway, it's definitely going to be Sam against some kind of racist villain, would be my guess.
Yes. Hatemonger.
Hatemonger would be a possibility. And then Phase 6. We don't. People have noted that Phase 6 is empty.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's because there's a whole bunch of stuff announced they didn't give us times for.
Well, just wait for 2 months from now when it's D23. And we're going to...
Do you think they're going to reveal? Because I thought they might not.
Oh, no. They're going to... I can almost guarantee you...
What did you say? D23?
D23 is Disney's big expo.
It's their
Shareholders thing. Is that November or October?
No, it's... it's July, August. It's in September.
Okay, so you... If there may be more. What we know for sure is that they didn't say anything about Armor Wars, but the creator said no, that's still happening.
Yes.
So that is in Phase 6 somewhere.
Yes.
We don't know about the Wakanda series, which is probably in Phase 6 somewhere.
We don't know about X-Men.
That's we don't know about X-Men. 6. I bet that's Phase 7.
No.
You think?
I heard Kevin Feige was asked backstage of so is X-Men going to be Phase 10? And he's like, why would we wait that long?
Okay. So maybe that's the big D23 reveal.
I honestly think the big reveal is they've already cast the FF. Yeah. And they're gonna reveal that.
I think you're probably right.
And then they'll announce X-Men, and they'll probably announce who Wolverine is.
That makes sense. So here's what we know. November 2024 is the Fantastic Four movie.
Yep.
I am almost sure if Krasinski's gonna be Reed.
And he's probably directing it.
Yeah. May 2025. Avengers the Kang Dynasty, part one of a two-part Avengers movie, just like Endgame and Infinity War. Mm-hmm. And then November 2025, Avengers Secret Wars.
Yep.
Now, we know it's not the Russo brothers. It is, in fact, Daniel Destin.
He's doing the Kang Dynasty. Okay. We're not sure if he's going to be doing the second one.
I bet he is.
Probably so. It speaks to that Daniel... He has three names and I can't
remember. Destin Crit.
Yes. It speaks to him being able to sort of work with Marvel, and he's a team player.
Yeah. So here's my thing. My theory on Avengers was that the next Avengers movie was going to be called Young Avengers. I thought it was all going to be about passing the torch and all that kind of thing. The fact that it's the Kang Dynasty, and they're calling this whole thing the Multiverse Saga, tells me instead that probably America Chavez is going to be important.
Yep.
And that they're going to introduce the Young Avengers in the space of the other Avengers.
Probably so.
So I think they're not going to separate them out as the Young Avengers just yet. I think they'll be like a sub-team, and they'll make reference to it. They'll be like, oh, we're like the Young Avengers.
I think the Kang Dynasty and the last Avengers are going to be insane.
Well, here's the thing. In the MCU, the Avengers, everyone who's a superhero is an Avenger. The Guardians of the Galaxy are Avengers.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's an Avenger.
Yep.
And the Guardians, like...
They were, in Endgame, they assembled alongside everybody else.
They assembled, but I don't know if they exactly went to any Avengers meetings and cast votes.
They don't have
meetings.
They don't have votes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Just because you team up with the flagship team, I don't feel like
you... meetings.
Did they? Oh, they kind of did. You're right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like Endgame made everybody there an Avenger, basically.
I think sort of thematically, yeah, but I wouldn't say, like... I bet the Guardians don't think of themselves as Avengers.
No, I think... I kind of agree with Dave. I don't think they're Avengers. Yeah. I think there is going to be a core. I think, you know, Sam Wilson will be Cap.
Sam, yeah.
And then they'll have Captain Marvel. It's going to be one of the weirdest-looking Avengers team I've probably
Here's
ever
the thing.
Seen.
Shang-Chi is going to be on that team.
Yes, he is. Most definitely.
And who else? Who else did they introduce? Probably no Eternals. Maybe Cersei. Maybe. But, like, Black Knight and Blade will have been had a movie since then.
Yeah.
The Fantastic Four may be around for that. Like, I have a feeling that they're all... I mean, Fantastic Four will be in Secret Wars. I guarantee that.
So, Avengers might be a team, but I feel like the Avengers movies are going to be kind of Marvel Universe movies.
That's what I think is the case, yeah.
And it's going to encompass everybody. And that could include people we don't even know yet. I mean...
Yep.
That could be where they introduced the X-Men, for all we know.
That's the thing. If Secret Wars, the X-Men were a big part of it.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. The Kang Dynasty in the comics was like... It was like Busick's story where Kang basically comes and takes over the Earth.
Right. It was time traveling.
And I have a feeling this is going to be more multiverse-y.
Yeah.
I think the Kang Dynasty is going to be him trying to establish dominion over the multiverse. And that they may bring in Captain Carter and some of the other multiverse characters people like. And then Secret Wars, I think they're going to do the really, really difficult... Like, I thought Endgame was tricky. But having to blend all those characters plus... The classic Secret Wars, which was all the characters going to Battle World and fighting it out, and the new Secret Wars, which was all the different multiverse stuff in a patchwork world, which makes more sense as a Marvel Cinematic Universe thing.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. I don't know how they're going to do it, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
That's what the MCU excites me. When I have things I can speculate on, when I don't know what they're going to do, that's what I
like. I haven't heard you this excited about the MCU for like a year.
It's been a while, because the thing is, like, I haven't loved the stuff that's been happening. I love the TV shows.
Yeah.
I love I love Falcon and Winter Soldier. I love what they did with Loki. I love Ms. Marvel. But
feel like it's... Would you say it's pregnant with possibilities right now?
Yes, I would say that. Also, by the way, looking at this thing, there's a... we've got November, and then May, and then November. So people are like, oh, Phase 6 looks empty. I'm like, that's because they haven't revealed most of it.
Right.
Because if you look at the same time period... for Phase 5, there's 12 things on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't know about all the TV shows. We don't know about all the movies. I think it's entirely possible it's next
And the animation stuff, which is not on that.
That's my next thing to talk about.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, other thing was we got animation and some stuff I wasn't excited about, but I'm now kind of excited about. Spider-Man Freshman Year.
Yeah. The designs on that
designs
look
really good.
Freshman year in college.
And it seems like...
This would be picking up after the last Spider-Man movie?
People are speculating it might be Tom Holland. I think it's a multiverse. I don't think it's actually the Tom Holland. Because Green Goblin's in it. Harry Osborn's in it.
Yeah. We'll see.
There's some stuff where it doesn't quite fit into the Tom Holland continuity.
Actually, I'm something of a multiversal character myself.
And then Marvel Zombies, which we got a release date for. I don't remember what it was.
I'm
2024.
I'm weirdly excited for this.
You don't even like zombies.
I don't like zombies, but their What If issue of Marvel Zombies was great.
They also did say What If Season 2, which I think is 2024 as well.
Yeah.
They don't have an official date for it.
I thought that was sooner than that, but
I thought it was too, but it's not on their list. Although maybe it's not, because it's not a movie. And then X-Men 97, which I didn't think I was that into because I wasn't that into the original show.
Then but you saw the Magneto in the costume.
They're
going to
pick up, and it's like Magneto leading and like Mr. Sinister and the Hellfire Club, and they're going to do sort of the Xavier off in space, and they're going to go back to that period that I actually kind of like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's kind of cool.
That Magneto costume...
it's a good costume.
It's a great costume, and I've heard some gripes about it.
That's the weird one that Romita Junior did, I think. Yeah, well, it's kind of iconic in its way, but it's like... It doesn't look modern, right?
No.
It's not how we do costumes now. Everything looks like it now looks like it should be in a video game and has like ultra detail. And that one is just like kind of like iconic and big and stuff.
Yeah.
I am more interested in this than I expected to be because I just want to see how they do it. Yeah. I suspect they're going to have better animation than the 90s show did, but I know they're also going to want to pay homage to the visual style. I want to see that in action. I want to see. I need to see it actually animated. The still frames are a little weird to look at. You know, Randy, you and I have not had anything like going on in the comics for the last since the Hickman era that resembles the kind of X-Men I think we want.
Yeah.
And so weirdly, this cartoon may be the closest, even though I know it's also going to be covering stories probably from eras that were not my eras, like 90s and maybe some 2000 stuff. But I'm interested to see, like, are they eventually going to end up with the weird, that style, and looking like the Morrisons? Are they going to go through the Morrison era?
Well, they've
get to Cassandra Cain?
That'd be fantastic.
They've already confirmed that the season 2 is greenlit.
But it's going to be like, I hope it's like with their hyper melodrama where he's like, Xavier, Cassandra is your sister! You know?
I would love to see the Morrison era adapted.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it's kind of got a, there's some fun craziness going on there.
But Cable being it.
And
Cable's already been in it.
That's true, but not really.
And Cable is, like, he was one of the designs shown.
Yeah. No, I mean in the Morrison X-Men.
I need to see, animated style Storm talking to, like, Beak. Beak, what is bothering you?
My buddy Morph went missing.
Yeah, it showed two teams. It's like the X-Men from the 97, then it was Sunspot. It looks like a bald Morph, I guess.
Yeah, Morph's back, I guess.
Cable, Bishop, Forge, and Nightcrawler.
Yeah, very 90s team.
Yeah. It sounds fun.
It does.
Magneto in charge is the big
and
thing.
And the villains are Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, Callisto, Val Cooper, which they're bringing Val in.
All legit.
And Sinister.
Val Cooper. And what do you call it? Magneto training, taking over the team training is like pretty much right from my era of X-Men. Yeah. And it's a fascinating outgrowth for the character. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yep.
All right. Let's take a break from our giant extended news thing, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 20th, and Wednesday, July 27th. We'll hit the stuff from last week real quick. There's not a lot. Just a couple like new ones, to sort of the indie ones. Dark Spaces Wildfire, which is IDW's new... It's like their creator-owned line.
Say it again.
It's Dark Spaces Wildfire.
Oh, right. That's Scott Snyder's thing. Yes. It's pretty notable.
So this is... They're launching a new line of... I think it's creator-owned. I'm not positive.
Dark Spaces is like the umbrella title?
No. This is their line. I don't know what it's... Is it called IDW Studios? It's IDW Originals is what they're called.
Okay.
Just give me a few of them. I'm just going to see if they said anything about this. So there's a little write-up at the end. Oh, so Mark Doyle, the editor who ran the Batgirl of Burnside.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I guess he's over at IDW now, and this is his sort of like...
He's sort of cultivating
his
kind
line.
Of thing.
Yeah, kind
makes
of like,
sense. He's good.
It's like their Vertigo line, it looks like.
So the notable thing, the premise of this was kind of cool, I thought.
Yeah, and as Dave said, it is by Scott Snyder. The artist is Hayden Sherman, I don't think I know...
Just in case you're not remembering Scott Snyder, he wrote Batman for like a super famous run for about last, you know, not in the last 5 years, but about 10 years ago, I guess.
Yep.
And created the Court of Owls and a bunch of other stuff. And then he's also written like horror comics. Oh, he did Dark Knight, DC Metal. What do they call it?
Yeah.
Dark Knight's Metal.
No.
That was another one of his big
this
projects.
This is a little more grounded.
A little more grounded, a little bit more like some of the other stuff he's done, like indie stuff. But it's about a and you've read it, Nick, so you know it better than I do, maybe. But my understanding was that it's about some female prisoners that are part of like some kind of program that you know they go out and have to fight wildfires. They probably get some time off or something for it, and in some way they decide to pull a heist or something while they're in the middle of one of these big forest fires.
Yeah, that's the concept.
Does that
okay.
Fit?
I think this is a real thing that they use prisoners as, like, wildfire.
I believe so.
They do.
One of the many things that they do with prisoners that's pretty messed up is dangerous labor.
However, Snyder does a good job of giving each a distinct personality. The main person is suffering from a debilitating disease that she's just found out.
I'm sure that would prompt one to be a little, take some more risks.
A little bit. It honestly feels less like a Scott Snyder book and more a little like Ed Brubaker in sort of its kind of pulp crime aspect.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting first issue that the art is really cool. Like them being in the middle of a wildfire and just like these bright oranges and they're wearing orange and little
the colors almost are a little retro, like, in acidic. The sense that they look like sort of 80s 90s coloring, yeah, kinda, but yeah. not that, like, it's not hyper real, which I kind of appreciate. And I know with Snyder, he's a guy who thinks about these kind of things, so it's probably very deliberately chosen.
But it was a very good first issue, definitely worth checking out.
And then there's a new Image book called Rogues Gallery, which of course we had to carry, which even the font looks a little bit like our logo. We should sue them.
It does. Let's get them.
Which is written by Hannah Rose May and art by Justin Mason.
This has an interesting premise.
It does. And I
have read this one. It actually wasn't quite what I thought it was based on the solicit, or at least the tone was different. So what I knew that it was somewhat about was kind of like in the real world, there's a woman who portrays like a superhero on a TV show, and it's like
a CW show.
Yeah, and it's meant to be in like a late air stage of it where it's like flagging, you know, like year 7 of The Flash or something like that.
Year 10, actually, is what
year 10. And people, like, the fans are very down on it, but they're specifically targeting the actress in the one of the lead roles. And they're like, some of these is kind of a look at that toxic fandom, and they're like, she's the reason it screwed up. Her contract negotiation is bringing down the show, and she demanded that they change this about some villain because she didn't like it, and they changed something from the comics that pissed everybody off.
She's also in possession of like
a super rare like first issue of the comic that it's from.
Okay.
And so a couple of the fans decide to go and steal it from her. And there's clearly some suggestion of possible violence. Hmm. This I heard this like in their solicit for it. They're like, it's the Purge meets what was the other thing?
Oh yeah, you
not
told me.
Not Scream, but anyway, clearly home invasion-y type stuff happens. Now I thought it was going to be all from her perspective, and it was that like the solicit almost made it sound like, you know, she'll have to find out whether the hero she portrays, which I think they made out like she doesn't even care about much, is like whether she can find that hero in her to defend her home. But I'm like, this issue is actually told entirely from the perspective of these sort of toxic fans, somewhat focusing on a guy who's like kind of living a shitty life with like an alcoholic dad, mm-hmm. and like has lived at home longer than he'd like to. But, and is, like, having financial troubles, needs to move out, and he, like, kind of is, like, he's, like, she's not that bad, she's not the problem with the show. He's kind of defending her, and his asshole friends are, like, oh, stop the white knighting, bro. And, but because of the financial draw of the thing, he's, like, all right, let's do this. And so he ends up going along, and it's kind of maybe his arc, at least in this first issue. It's pretty interesting. It was, I thought, well-written, and actually, like, captured that side of fandom, And is, you know, very critical of it, but like didn't, it felt like a more realistic portrayal of it, and not like just like, oh, this is what I think it's like. I don't know if it's going to show more of this woman, or if it's only going to be seen through their eyes, or what. But
I imagine they might flip it in the next issue and have it from her perspective.
Right, it could be completely from her perspective. But it was pretty interesting. I'd recommend it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've got previews of the first three of these. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'll have to give that a look. Okay, let's jump over to this week's stuff. First off, another Image book. I think it's Image, yeah. The Hollows.
Oh, right, that's the new Sam Keith one,
yeah,
right?
it's Sam Keith and Chris Ryall. Chris Ryall who just finished adapting the Joe Hill's Reign.
Right.
He's also a former IDW's chief editor.
And I think most people kind of know Sam Keith. Well, definitely, if you know him at all, you know him for the Max in the 90s.
And you know he does weird stuff.
Right. He's kind of trippy, psychedelic, sometimes superhero elements, sometimes fantasy elements. So, like, I guess if those are, if you have some fondness for what he did, maybe worth checking out.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird, trippy thing. It's got beautiful artwork. It's 100 pages. So it's not a graphic novel, but it's like a big single issue.
Yeah. That is a big single issue.
Marvel has Wild Cards, Drawing of the Cards. This is a 90s shared anthology novel project.
I think it started in the 80s.
Did it start in the 80s?
The Wild Cards, yeah. Okay.
So
this George R.R. Martin was like the editor
Yeah, he was the main editor. So this is a thing that was like, I played the GURPS, had a GURPS Wild Cards.
That's right.
And they had in that game thing, they talked about the origins of this. And basically it was like all these writers, Melinda Snodgrass, Lou Scheiner, George R. R. Martin, they were getting together and they were playing like Hero World, one of the RPGs.
Yeah.
And he said they were spending so much time playing and building their characters that they weren't writing. And they're we need to turn this into a writing project. And
that's so funny.
That's how Wild Cards started, is a shared universe Everybody made their own characters, but then it all worked in a shared universe of like, dark, real superheroes.
Right. And everybody was kind of doing that in the 80s, but this was even a degree beyond, because it was kind of like real-world physics, more interaction with real-world sort of what was going on and
it,
sort of...
It also had sort of a deliberately lurid element to it. Sure. There was a more lot sex, of sex.
Yeah, more sex and violence.
But not... Like, it was a very interesting story, and they also tied it into history, so, like, yeah. The thing all starts when Jet Boy, they're sort of
a World War II hero who's just a normal person, but yeah. kind of like a person who kind of became famous in headlines and stuff.
And then Dr. Tachyon, who is a alien from Takis or something like that.
Yeah.
Basically, he rebels against his people who are trying to test some bioweapon on Earth, and Jet Boy's trying to stop them, and it ends up basically causing this wild card virus where. Some of humanity gets, like, powers, and they're called aces.
Right, basically, if you get the good powers, you're an ace. If you get kind of creepy, weird powers or just things that distort who you...
You're a joker. And then also it can kill you.
Right. as I recall, it killed off a lot of people.
Yeah.
I remember there was, like, a story in that first one, just as a random memory, that was, like... It was as if basically Jim Morrison actually became the Lizard King. He became the Lizard King and squared off, I think, against a guy who was, like... A Russian guy living in America who'd fully adapted to American lifestyle and capitalism, and who hated the counterculture.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of interesting story you got sometimes in Wild Cards, and his sort of proletariat hero challenges what he saw as like the decadent youth culture of the Lizard King.
Yep,
So
there's also the Super Pimp Fortunato, powered by tantric sex magic.
Yep. Yeah. You're never gonna forget Fortunato once you've encountered him.
So this drawing of the cards is actually it's not an adaptation, but it is based on the early stories because it's a story of Dr. Tachyon and Jet Boy, and we're seeing Jet Boy like coming back to from World War II, and his girl has got a new guy. She thought he was dead.
Right.
And he feels out of place. And then Tachyon is like trying to get the government to agree to help him, and he's using his telekinetic powers very wildly and freely.
If I'm not mistaken, the alien stuff was it revealed in that level of detail?
No,
originally,
because
I felt like they had to they would get to it in later books.
Yeah. They did, and I think
they're kind of just starting with it out of the gate. Like, you see a fair amount of the alien side of things.
I thought this was, if you've never read Wild Cards, I think this is a good sort of intro to it. It's not...
A little primer.
It's a little not mature readers. It's weirdly, like, PG-13.
Right, they, like, kind of, like, turned it down just a little bit.
But I think it made me want to read. I was like, oh, you know, they should keep all those in print on one of those novels.
I had the same effect on me, so...
So, yeah, it's a good...
And if you're feeling a little nostalgic for it, worth checking out.
Speaking of nostalgia, there's a couple projects like that this week. Jenis Vell, Captain Marvel. This brings Peter David back.
Right, and Peter David's been doing a bunch of sort of retro projects. He did this stuff with the Black Costume Spider-Man. Yeah. He did...
He's about to do a Joe Fixit series.
Yep.
And he's doing Maestro.
New Fantastic Four?
And New Fantastic Four. But most of the stuff he's been doing is period pieces of like stuff from the period he was writing them.
Yeah.
This is a modern continuity, and it brings back Rick Jones, who had been dead.
Yep.
And Jenis Vell, who had been dead.
That is to say, Jenis Vell, the son of the original Captain Marvel, Marvel's Captain Marvel.
So he's back, he doesn't have any memories. Rick Jones is like, and they're probably going to bond the bond gun together. This is touching on Peter David writes this, but also whoever edited this clearly has a love for that era. Because his notes at the end of it, he notes like, he's like three little editor's notes of like, here's what this means. He's like, this is from Immortal Hulk. This is from Incredible Hulk 418. This is from Incredible Hulk number 1. And it's like, he's like doing the, like, this is a homage to all the Hulk stuff you like. Because, like, Rick's fiance Marlo is mentioned in this. And then they're dealing with, like, Moondragon. And it's an interesting, story. If you want something sort of Hulk adjacent, but it's like Hulk supporting characters. It was not what I expected.
Is it? He is powered by... He has the Nega Bands.
He does.
And there is reason to be thinking about those again because of a certain Marvel TV project.
Correct.
Yep.
That's interesting. That might have been
cosmic awareness.
Part of what greenlit it.
Then on the actual flashback side of things, we got Chris Claremont, the creator of, doing Gambit from the early days when he first showed up.
And when, Storm had been de-aged into a kid.
Yes, Dave didn't know about this.
Yeah.
I thought it was a flashback story.
Like, why is there a flashback when Gambit was older than Aurora? How does that work? And I'm like, no, she was de-aged. Nick, you remember who de-aged
Yes,
her?
It was Nanny and Orphan Maker.
Nanny and Orphan Maker.
Okay. I wondered if it had something to do with, because, you know, I remember it at some point Magneto had been de-aged
that
in,
was
like,
Moira.
The 70s.
No, that was Mutant Zero. Mutant Alpha.
Was it?
Yeah. Originally, yeah. Yes. Moira didn't have any powers.
No.
Well, no, that's I thought she just... Okay.
No.
She did have science weird shit.
There was something, but Mutant Alpha is the one who did.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was him or, like, Eric the Red or something like that, but...
I don't know. At any rate, yes, she was...
I think Mutant Alpha is correct,
though. She's a kid. They're in New Orleans, I think, or Louisiana or something.
Doing thief stuff.
Good thief stuff, yeah.
Yeah. If you have that Claremont fondness, if you grew up in his era, this might be just the nostalgia you're
Well, especially because this was a period, this was after all the X-Men had gone through the Siege Perilous and lost their memories or changed or something. And so... We saw them when they all got back together as a team again, but like what they were doing in the meantime, there's actually plenty of story to explore there, and so it makes sense to do a miniseries.
I remember when I lost my powers in the Siege Perilous.
I don't remember that. Did that happen?
It was a thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe I lost my memories when I went through Siege Perilous.
There's a miniseries about it. We should check it out.
This is Dave number one.
Yeah. Check out Dave 1-4 for the full story.
Ant-Man number one, another miniseries. This is a weird one because it's like retro Ant-Man. It's like Hank Pym. But it's like,
and it's also drawn in kind of a retro style, which it's a good kind of style of art. Reminds me of a little bit of those guys like Darwin Cook and who were all those people who worked on Daredevil with Mark Waid?
Chris Samnee and Paul Rivera and all
those guys.
This also has an Ant-Man from the future, and it looks like they're going to do all the Ant-Man. They're going to do the Black Ant. And Scott Lang and all that kind of stuff.
Is it going to have the who's the one that Kirkman made?
That's the Black Ant.
That's the Black Ant. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But what do they call him back when though?
He was the Irredeemable Ant.
Irredeemable, yes.
We got Amazing Spider-Man number 900 this week, sort of, because it's also Amazing Spider-Man number 6.
You know how it is: legacy numbering, regular numbering. It's crazy.
And this is a big giant issue. It's art by Ed McGuinness. Zeb Wells writes it. And it's the Sinister Six, but in a way you don't expect.
Yep.
And an old-school Spidey villain, and a lot of Spidey supporting characters show up, and it's like a big anniversary celebration issue. There's Young Justice Targets, number one. This is a original story by Greg Weisman, who is one of the guys, one of the main guys on the Young Justice animated show. He did a couple series before that were like continuity filling, and they were both really, really good. This is similar. It is it takes place in what is now year 10, and it's a story about a lot of these characters. There's a assassination attempt against the character they all know. There's the bodyguards of the various Harper clones. There's a lot of cool guest stars. It's a really fun story, and then there's a backup story that takes place in sort of the early days of Young Justice. And it's all very much in continuity with Young Justice. So, like, if you've been watching the show, this is very much, like, more Young Justice.
Right on.
And done pretty well, I think. Superman Space Age, which is a new sort of high-concept project. I think it's... I don't know how big it is. It's book one here. It's not
prestige
oversized
format.
I bet there'll be at least three, maybe four.
Yeah, my guess. Mike Allred and Laura Allred do the art.
So the art has a deliberate throwback to, I would say, Silver Age DC style.
Yep.
And the vibe I got from it, I haven't read the full thing, though, is that somewhere between Spider-Man Life Story and the way it interacted with, like, the 60s.
Yeah.
And Darwin Cook's New Frontier.
Yeah.
Because it ultimately, over the course of things, introduces a version of Batman, Wonder Woman, Hal Jordan. I'm sure he'll become Green Lantern at some point.
Lex Luthor.
And stuff like that.
But also, I see George Wallace is in there.
George Wallace, as in Segregation Today, Segregation Tomorrow?
Yep.
Oh, good. I hope Superman beats the shit out of it.
But yeah, there's reference to, like, Jonathan Kent's time in World War II, which is a little odd. It's weirdly realistic.
Right.
It's by Mark Russell, who's known for doing sort of political kind of stuff.
You may remember when he had Fred in the Flintstones comic say, "We committed a genocide, Barney. We participated in one," or something like that.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, like, I think if you were looking for those sort of DC, like, a sort of serious treatment of how things might have actually played out in the Silver Age.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not arch serious. It's not super realistic because, yeah, you still got Mike Elder drawing. And I don't think Russell is interested in doing the super realistic stuff. But definitely there's like JFK's assassination, civil rights movement, stuff like that is all playing out much more in the forefront than, believe it or not, than it did in the 60s comics, where I'm gathering a probably pretty white bread DC was kind of wanting to squint it away until Hard Traveling Heroes happened.
So there's also this interesting, it's called DC Mech, which you remember there's Avengers Tech On and all those that where they have battle suits.
A lot of miniseries where superheroes put in battle suits.
It's a new writer I'm not familiar with, Kenny Porter.
Okay.
Artist Baldemar Rivas, which actually I really kind of like the art. So this is, it opens with the tail end of the Justice Society, the end of the war.
Did I hear like mech parademons attack?
One giant parademon attack.
Oh.
It's okay. Like a big mech, it's been like a big King Kong
parademon. Yeah, like a kaiju robot.
And it is like a kaiju. And it kills half the Justice Society. and then they retire and become scientists and start building mecha to fight out parademons if they come back. Which they do. And then we cut to Krypton, and Darkseid's little crazy anti-life planet is moving around destroying Krypton. So they're sending Kal-El out to basically go to Earth to prevent Darkseid from sending his kaiju up against them. So it's kaiju versus mecha, but Darkseid's making the kaiju, and the mecha are all super powered.
And it's just super weird, but it's fun sounding.
It's super fun. Like, I really liked it. They're Superman, they're Batman, they're Flash, all have mecha. And it's like, in this world, it's almost like a what if. It's like, instead of developing superpowers, their superpowers fuel these giant mechs because they know kaiju are coming.
I mean, that's fun. I like that.
I liked it. I thought it was really fun. I had no expectations for this, and I thought it was a really fun first issue. And then we got Detective Comics number 1062,
mm-hmm.
which is a new number one, essentially. It is Ram V and Raphael Albuquerque doing it, and it is a very sort of gothic-y, there's sort of supernatural elements to it. I don't want to say too much about it, but there's a really fun interaction between Bruce Wayne and Nightwing, where they're talking about, like, Bruce has got a little spooked by whatever he ran into, there's some sort of supernatural threat, and then one of Bruce's old sort of anti-hero shows up as well. There's also a backup story with Jim Gordon that takes place immediately after Joker that I thought was interesting. It's more of a hard-boiled Ed Brubaker style story of him. It's a good issue. I like this take for Detective Comics.
It's cool that the two flagships right now have interesting new directions. So you got Chip Zdarsky doing his thing on Batman and now Ram V on Detective.
Yeah.
The Batline has been the showpiece for the last year, with good side projects like Robin. Obviously, Nightwing is like probably their best book running.
Yeah.
And like it's been the place to be.
Yeah.
DC's. It's never a surprise when they put some muscle behind Batman.
Yeah.
But we don't always like everything, and like I'd say their track record right now is as good as I've seen in decades.
Yeah.
Like it's really good.
A couple new things. The Liminal Zone, which is a new graphic novel from Junji Ito. So more Junji Ito out there. Dune Volume 2, which adapts the Muad'Dib part of the storyline. Yep.
This is like a very serious adaptation that like has like pretty much all the main scenes from the book, some judicious editing, but it's not like you know, as good as the movie was, it was like its own vision, right?
Yeah.
This is the book. It has like all the scenes you're gonna know, visually adapted.
Really beautiful art.
Really beautiful artwork.
This is the second volume.
I've got the first one, and they did a very good job with it, so I certainly recommend both volumes. Well, I haven't read this yet. I'm going to assume that based on the track record adapting the first, they're going to do a very good job with the second.
There is a second, Zatanna, the Jewel of Gravesend, which is a like teen Zatanna book.
Oh, okay.
They did one previously.
Is this is this for the same line that has the Raven and Beast Boy and all that stuff?
No, it's the one that's slightly older. It's the teenage line, right?
Well, that is...
Oh, you're right.
That's the one I mean, teenage. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, this is going to hit that teen market.
Yep.
Cool. Zatanna seems like a good character for that.
And then the first Hulk by Donny Cates gets its trade paperback this week as well, as does his like fourth volume of Thor.
Yep.
All right. I think that covers everything.
I think so. I think
that's the big all stuff.
Right. So we're going to be back in just a second. We're going to talk about Nope and possibly some other movies. Nope.
Never has a movie title been so ready to have headlines made out of it. I've seen like Nope, yep.
But, I mean,
talk about, like, viewers didn't say nope to nope.
Talk about bravery, though, man. If Jordan Peele had made a stinker for his third movie, all the headlines just write themselves.
Right.
So, like, it's daring.
Should you see it? Nope.
Yeah. Anyway, spoilers for Nope. We're gonna spoil things. And this is really... Go in as unspoiled as you can. Like, Dave and I, we were trying to avoid that second trailer. We went and
Was way too blabby.
We went and saw Thor, Love and Thunder, and they played it, and Dave and I talked... We never do this. We sat there and talked to each other through the trailer.
Yes.
Because we did not want to see or hear it.
Yep. And it worked, actually.
It did
I
work.
Think.
I didn't register any of it.
I heard them talking a little bit about, like, UFO-y stuff.
I didn't catch any of it. I was, like, completely tuning
but
it out.
But I had already, like, tuned it out at least once before. Yeah. But broadly, it worked. And that first teaser was so good and evocative and yet told you nothing. So, yeah, I would have preferred that. And we've had a few friends, like Shireen, who works here, and then my buddy Fathery. They went into
trailers.
It knowing nothing. And they both had good experiences. And before we get into any plot or anything, I think we can briefly say we all liked it to varying degrees.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Liked or loved it.
Nick loved it. Nick thinks it may be his favorite Jordan Peele movie.
I think it might be.
I think it was my least favorite
Jordan Peele
movie.
Bullshit.
But I also still really, really liked it.
Right. I think it's sort of... It might be my least favorite, too, which is weird because it does have UFO-y stuff in it.
Yep.
And, like, that pushes, like, a lot of buttons for me. I love spooky UFO stuff. Like, whether it's talking about Close Encounters, Signs, the movie from about 10 years ago called, like, Dark Skies.
Yep.
I like that genre. I sort of viewed this a little bit the way I did Us, which is to say it was a fascinating movie. It has all this fascinating sort of stuff to talk about and symbolism that you don't need to know, but, like, definitely is there. Or if you don't, if you don't take at least some stab at it, you're going to be wondering, what the fuck was that plot with the chimp subplot? But it's also, it was a compelling viewing. Like, I enjoyed watching it. I just felt a little detached at times.
I think that's where I was, too. It's like, it's not that I didn't like it. And I think you had trouble playing in the characters. I think you said all the characters were a little...
Well, unlike his previous two movies, which had, like, just sort of, like, instantly kind of likable tropey characters, and they were tropey.
Yeah.
You know, you have a young biracial couple in there, and there's some secrets to learn, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's a... But they present as, like, this very, very nice couple. You're rooting for them.
Yeah.
Then you have, like, a rather kind of almost hokey suburban family in Us...
And you've got this taciturn dude and his jerky sister.
Yeah, yeah. She's, like, kind of obnoxiously extroverted.
She's always late to everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he is, like, so sullen that every once in a while there were some early lines where I'm like, I actually am not 100% sure I heard what he said.
I was starting to think he had so... because I was starting to think maybe there was, like, a social anxiety thing.
I think there is.
Do you think so?
I think there's a fact that he doesn't get along with people. He gets along with animals.
Animals, yeah.
And,
that's a good point.
And also he was
traumatized by what happened to his dad.
Yeah, the only person he can really sort of have any emotional resonance with is his sister.
Sister, yeah.
So let's go ahead and
I'm done.
I was like, let's say what the premise is.
So the premise is that there's a chimp.
No. There's a ranch where a brother and a sister are running their dad's ranch, which is failing.
Kind of. It was Hollywood Horses, and they rent out horses for movies and stuff.
Black brother and sister.
And yes, it's failing.
Yeah, they train horses for movies, and they're having some issues. There is indeed a subplot with a person who owns some nearby land.
Yep.
And it's a weird subplot. Where he was a child actor who's now, like, kind of runs, like, a little sort of slightly hokey theme, Old West theme park.
Old West theme park, yep.
But he was on, like, when he was a child, there was a disastrous incident with a chimp that was part of the show where it attacked and killed some people or maimed them.
Yep. And it definitely killed a couple people, too.
Definitely did, and what I believe is the most disturbing scene in the whole movie.
Uh-huh.
And that's anyway, that's going on in the background, and you're trying to figure out how it relates to the fact that there seems to be glimpses of this very weird, spooky UFO thing, and there's, like, missing horses and stuff from the ranch. And ultimately, the brother and sister will try, and they're determined to capture it on film. And they bring in another person, a guy, a kind of a doofus from Fry's Electronics, very specifically Fry's Electronics.
Yeah, that was weird.
There's sometimes I think Peele likes to use sometimes very specific things, like in the sequence where they're talking about how the ape incident was spoofed on SNL.
Yeah,
it's very specific. It's like Chris Kattan is playing this character
It's so specific. I wanted to look it up on YouTube.
Right.
I'm like, no, show us that. I want to see that.
And by the way, that was a great scene. There's you know, we'll dive into a few things specifics on this, but. That guy who was a kid actor who had some success also later on, and that's what the park is based on, but where he is telling a person about this really horrific incident,
yeah.
But he's saying it because he's like, he's turned his life into kind of that capitalist enterprise,
yeah.
And he's giving like a casual pitch talking about this horrible thing, and he's talking about how great the SNL spoof of it was, yeah. And it is disturbing to hear. It is like a singularly disturbing scene.
Well, especially
but it's him being enthusiastic.
Well, especially when they cut to him as a kid being clearly traumatized
by
this. Oh,
man, yeah.
And it's like it's very, very clear that he has buried all this because it's the way that he survives. Yeah. He survives by turning it all into capitalism.
And you see him talking about it a little bit with his wife where he's got like this anxiety sort of that's barely kept at bay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the movie has something of a puzzle box quality, which is something Peele likes to do. Is for sure Us did it as well, where you'll see some things early on, and you're like, I don't have any context for this, and you'll get context later. Yeah. Like, what was the stuff that fell from the sky and injured his dad, Keith David?
Yeah.
What is the deal with the chimp? And all of that stuff, and things will be revealed later. And, like, and also stuff about the nature of their relationship as a brother and sister.
Yeah.
Which does grow during the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is there to say?
I mean, I think the design of the alien was pretty spectacular.
It's phenomenal.
And right. The way he does
we gave all the spoiler warnings, right?
We gave all the spoiler warnings.
So I didn't know this, but Jordan Peele, he originally was an artist.
Really?
So
wild.
That's where he began his. It was like an artist.
I know that Keegan-Michael Key was like a Shakespearean actor and stuff.
That
and
makes
I'm like,
sense.
Their origins are so unusual. I didn't know that about.
Yeah, Peele. I think his family was in like something, but he started out as an artist. So he teamed together with another person to come up with this concept of this alien.
That's crazy. That almost reminds me of how like. James Cameron is a really talented artist, and I know he worked on like some of the designs in Aliens. Like he helped design the drop ship, and if you see his art on it, it looks like freaking like
it's
you know,
almost as detailed as Geiger's.
Yeah, and I was gonna say who's the famous Star Wars artist?
Oh,
Ralph McQuarrie.
Ralph McQuarrie. Yeah.
Like he does art that detailed.
Yeah.
So it's impressive. It's cool when people have those multi talents.
And then they got the cinematographer
because the alien is really weird looking. Like
it is.
It has both its normal sort of form, the saucer like. I can only say, like, pale, sort of fleshy, dolphin-skinny...
With a thing, gaping mouth.
Mouth-eye thing, whatever it is.
I thought the design was great because it looks like a UFO. It's got the saucer thing. And the hole underneath it, that is its mouth or whatever
it's like
it
a maw,
is.
Sucks things
it,
in.
It all feels part of a UFO until you know that it's a thing. Like, you look at it, and the first half of the movie, it's just a flying saucer.
Right.
And then when you learn what it is, you're like, oh, that makes so much sense.
And you also see it kind of, like, unfold.
At the end, when it takes on its full form, is really interesting.
Yeah.
And they got the cinematographer from that Christopher Nolan works with on, like, Dunkirk and Interstellar to help film. Because I think Jordan Peele went up to several cinematographers and told them what he wanted, and most of them are like, no. that can't be done. And this guy likes to roll up his sleeves and try to capture things.
Well, wouldn't be able to be done?
Because he filmed all this on IMAX, like, screens and cameras.
I know that I read some little snippet of an interview, and he said, I think that after all the pandemic cooped up, he wanted to do something kind of big. He wanted to do a big thriller.
And he wanted this to be like the Summer Escape. It's like, he said there was a great Time magazine piece that we all read.
Right. It has some good sort of surface-level readings of the possible themes all of that.
But also...
And also says, like, it also just functions as a suspense.
And that I think, is the thing. Thriller. It's like, yes, there's levels to this because that's how Jordan Peele works, but also, first and foremost, he wants to make a movie that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like Peele stuff so much. It's like, there's some thought behind it. There's themes. You can analyze it. You could do a film class on these.
But that guy can film a scene.
But at the same time, if you don't want to get into the end, if you just want to sit down and have 2 hours of escapism, you got that too.
Yeah.
And that's a level that a lot of the artistic filmmakers aren't always great at that. You have to get so invested in it as a theme that you can't just sit and enjoy it as a movie.
When I think about some of the sort of knife's edge scenes, like this isn't like a terribly scary movie. It's sometimes a little disturbing, actually.
Yeah.
But like, just some of the eerie aura of, like, those sequences of them out on the plains.
Mm-hmm.
The flashback, for sure, with the chimp.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when the chimp looks at the camera, and
But thinking about the thing where he goes out late at night to check on the horses or whatever, mm-hmm. and he thinks he sees some aliens.
So, yep. Dave, you and I, you posted a thing on this about the Signs, that moment in Signs where the alien walks by.
Yeah, the brief glimpse in the camera, yeah.
That almost had the same feel for me. It was like, wait, because the kid, they're doing
it's like it
they're
detaches like
they're
from...
Like, they're like looking at him, and it's so like weird, slow movement.
Right, yeah, they move in that sort of weird, like a weird sort of sinuous way.
And then another one comes out, and it's closer to him, and it's like, and the music is perfectly timed for it. Yep. And it's such a great, so like, oh shit, it's going off. And then all of a sudden, it's a joke.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I thought that was fantastic.
You know what occurs to me? This structurally, it actually sort of followed, I think, feel like weirdly the pattern of Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where there's like a lot of like kind of eerie buildup, but there's this almost adventurous aspect, and it has bonding of characters, like he and his sister grow closer, even the doofy dude
they bring
from
an
Fries.
Angel from Fries.
Yep. Yeah, Fries is Quint. He's a. But anyway.
No, I believe the. The cinematographer.
Yeah, he is. That guy's gravelly voice was almost distracting.
Well, he is like the gravelous.
He's the bad guy from
Hollywood.
The Crow.
Yeah, he was in Crow. He was also in Alien Resurrection. He was also in a bunch of other like
weird cat. But yes, there's this kind of adventurous vibe where there still is certainly a sense of danger, but things have been revealed, and it's not like they're trying to keep anything from you near the end.
Well, I think that's what you're saying earlier too. It's like clearly this is a Spielberg homage, especially to Jaws, Close Encounters.
I really appreciate that Jordan Peele is trying new things. I know everyone loved Get Out, and everybody wants that kind of experience again.
Yeah.
But I also like that he's not trying to do that. He's not trying to replicate himself. He's trying to sort of stretch himself and kind of go in different routes.
His only common theme is he's clearly suspense and horror, run through all of...
Because I think that's what he grew up with. That's what he loves. He loves John Carpenter.
But each of his movies are different than the other.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. And this one, Jaws is one of my, I think, all-time favorite movies. And seeing that sort of replicated, not note for note, but sort of that bigness.
Well, I don't think I thought of that particular comparison until literally right this moment.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, the vibe of the last third is kind of different.
Yeah.
I had that vibe in the movie theater.
Yeah,
it was just kind of, instead of Jaws in
unlike
the water.
You, Nick, I did not shout out to the audience, this is like Jaws! It's just like Jaws!
That's weird. What's weird is when you do that in Jaws 2.
Something's going to explode at the end.
Dave, I think you're saying that you had trouble plugging in the characters at first.
Right.
I think it's interesting in the last third, the characters changed to an extent. Like, her, like, using, you know, like, taking that picture and the whole, like, that's a big moment for her. And his horseback ride to sort of distract.
I mean, they straight up used like Western music and stuff at
that
time.
That was great. And then when he shows up at the end, it was a great little moment. Like, that
he
kind of survived.
I wanted him
to survive.
He gets
a little bit, you know, I think Peele seems like a guy, he wants the cathartic release of the horror movies where the heroes broadly kind of make it out.
Yeah.
And, like, they may be scarred.
Yeah.
But, like, the release at the end of, like, Get Out is one of the best. When his buddy shows up.
Well, I think that's what changed for him. Because you look at the original ending for Get Out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It had a very bleak ending.
It was
ending.
A much bleaker. And I think he decided ultimately, he's like, after all of this, I didn't want the bleak ending. And I think he realized, I don't want to do the bleak endings. Even Us is pretty bleak.
Us is pretty brilliant.
Us is apocalyptic in a lot of ways, but at the same time, our lead characters have come through it okay.
Did they all come through it okay?
Yeah. Not everyone, but most of them.
The family did.
Yeah, that's true.
None of them are dead.
No, none of them are dead.
I mean, all traumatized, but they're all alive.
Traumatized, yes. And it's...
Their doppelgangers, not so much.
Is it just possible... Wait, did the doppelgangers...
Well, yes, there is the one thing... spoilers for Us. there is the one thing where maybe one of them is the doppelganger.
Yeah.
Well, but she's the character we've known. So.
Right, right. She's a doppelganger raised as a human.
Yes.
What do they call them? The
human gangers.
There's a term that they use for the people that lived underneath the...
It's not echoes.
Let's call them underneathers.
Underneathers. The Underdwellers, an homage to the best animated series episode ever.
I also saw this movie at the... not Us. I saw Nope at the Draft House, and before their pregame, it was, like, very weird. They had the little floppy people, which I think yours did, too.
So I went to a small theater in Boston, the same thing. I got there, and there's three of those inflatable car sales things up in the front. I thought they were just a goofy thing. And then in the movie, I'm like, oh, that's clever.
Oh, well, you didn't even know about that?
I didn't know about that.
Because that was even in the first teaser.
Was it?
Yeah, they
oh, they fall over.
Yeah, there was an eerie... Right.
But the weirdest thing the Draft House played at the very end was the Scorpion King trailer.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like... What the hell is this?
The art of the Draft House pre-show is when they can show you that stuff without you having any idea what you're
and
about
then
to
later
see.
On, it's like,
and it just like connected and it hit. I'm like, okay.
That was among the many weird references in there. I will later on see if I can parse that into have it some sort of thematic meaning. But if nothing else, it was just a great goofy reference.
But it was also like pulling their family, the first recorded video of a person on a horse being a black man that no one knows who he is.
Right.
And like Peele incorporating that into this family and like giving him a name and everything.
Yeah.
It was very interesting and kind of...
Well, go ahead. Finish.
No, no. I mean, I think stuff like that is what I like about Peele's movies is like he can add in all this real stuff into his fictional world.
So yeah, that's what I was going to say is and I'm not going to like try and dissect it. But there is stuff in here that is absolutely, at the very least, a critique of capitalism.
Yeah.
Yes.
Show business, exploitation, the nature of both the chimp and the creature sort of thing is likened, and you know the ability to like control it or not. The fact that what's his name, Joop? Who's the actor who plays him?
Stephen Young.
Yeah, Stephen Young.
He calls it, he tells his audience, and by the way, that was a great scene, too. I was like, what is going... There's so many scenes that in these Jordan Peele movies where I'm like, what is going to happen here?
He's like the ringleader of this circus kind of...
Right, he's trying to, like, make a capitalist sort of exploitation of, like, UFO horse abductions. Right.
Well, he's been feeding horses to the UFO.
Yes,
sure, which was really sad because OJ wanted them back.
Yeah.
And he was, like, talking to him about trying to get them back, and Stephen was like, oh, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, after the fact, I'm like, oh, they're going to date.
But when he said something like, he's like, I think they come out here to watch us. I call them the viewers.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's got a double meaning.
Yeah.
I'm like, the viewers that chews people up and spits them out.
Yeah.
And I will say, OJ and his sister are trying to make a buck too.
Yeah.
However, they're a little
more... But it occurs
to
me that it's like, at the very end, he pulls back from that. He also recognizes it as something uncontrollable.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole thing with the horses.
So there's some big thematics in there. Like, you can do a pretty deep dive. I was talking with Serena yesterday. I think everybody in the staff has seen it.
Yeah.
And Keith David dies from this shower of, like, he is killed
Nickel's
by money.
Quarters.
Like, and it's like a nickel, keys. I think, is actually what kills him. Yeah. I hadn't even quite put that together, but I'm like, if you're looking for your capitalism critique, there's a lot to play around with in this. There's some good dissertations that can be written on this.
This is another one of those, like, that you can talk about this movie. But that's one of the reasons, like, even though it didn't give me the same visceral thrills as a couple other movies that I watched this weekend, as a movie, it's very impressive.
Yep. The most disturbing scene for me, and I'll shut up after this, is the blood-drenched house.
Oh, that is
It was, like, right out of, like, Poltergeist or something, and it was just, like, this image.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's punctuated by the joke of, like, you've got a wheelchair on your on the roof. Yeah.
And the pig.
And the pig.
There's a lot of good little incidental humor amidst a movie that also has some, like, disturbing and weird stuff in
like
it.
Like Jaws.
What's
like
that?
Like Jaws. Like Jaws. It's punctuated by good
just
humor.
Just like Jaws.
Space Jaws.
All right. Well, we will have time to talk about the other movies next week because we ran along talking about all the news and stuff.
Yeah.
But that'll do it for this week. Hopefully you'll enjoyed our over 2 hour long podcast.
It's Comic-Con's big. Comic-Con's we have to go big too.
That's right. Yep. And next week, I'm going to bring back a whole bunch of news about Gen Con in a couple weeks, and I'll go that much faster, I think. But until next time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.